Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call this joint meeting of the K through 12 Finance Committee and the Property Tax Relief and Local Sales Tax Division to order. And I apologize for the later start. It's like the state tournament after one hockey game is done. The next one, you know, the Zamboni has to come out and clear the ice and get ready for the next game. So welcome, everyone. As Chair Greiling and I were kind of talking about all of this, especially when we're looking at property tax relief, the trick was, how do you kind of bring all of this together? And of course, school levies and equalization and equity and all of those things are related to property taxes. And so what the intent has been is to make sure that we can keep the property tax relief package all into one. And one way in which you do that is you bring the levies in also. Also, if you're going to balance, and one of the goals of the division and one of the goals for property tax relief is to make sure that every corner of the state has equal treatment when it comes to property tax relief. And one way in which you can help equalize all of that, because you're going to have local government aid, county program aid, and levies and so forth, is the levies are one way in which you help put that mix together. So one thing that brings us together are these levies. And what's important to know, and I'm going to turn this over to Representative Greiling, the chair, for a few comments, but what's important to know is that this, we're talking property tax relief. And that is very distinct, and Representative Greiling will tell you from education funding for classrooms and so forth. So before we get going, I'm going to turn this over to Chairperson Greiling.
Thank you, Chairperson Markport. And I just want to underscore what he said. And I said we could have jointly chaired this meeting. Mm-hmm. I could have chaired it, but I said, no, we definitely want Representative Markport to chair it, because we want to make sure it's absolutely clear that everybody knows property tax relief is for taxpayers. It can help pass levy referendums, but it is not a dime to the actual classroom. And so we want to keep that very distinct. And all of us from the Education Finance Committee are pleased to be here. We're glad there is a property tax division that has joint membership, so that those members can duke it out and then send off the part that applies to the regular tax bill to the regular tax bill. The part that goes together with education finance formulas will be in the education finance omnibus bill. And I think it's a very workable way, and it probably makes the most sense of anything I've ever seen to do with taxes and how it relates to ed finance in my 15 years here at the legislature. So with that, I want to thank Representative Markport for chairing the meeting, and I will be looking forward to hearing the bills the same as everyone else here. And I think it's also a time-saving measure, because then these bills only have to be heard once. Everyone in the room only has to come once. The authors have to present once, and we have to listen once. So thank you all for this new arrangement that perhaps Representative Markport thought up. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've asked Representative Dietrich and Representative Brown to put together some introductory comments on all of this equalization, and I think they have gone above and beyond. I see it looks like a slideshow here to be presented. When they are concluded with this, what we're going to do is there are a couple bills that are going to be heard early, and I see Representative Rukavina and Representative Swigum. We're going to hear those bills, and then we're going to get into the equalization bills kind of in order. We're going to take those in various, we're going to look at debt service, we're going to look at one that deals with agriculture, and then some that kind of have a scattering of levies. So welcome to levy night. Representative Dietrich, Representative Brown, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. and Madam Chair. I am Representative Brown, and this is Representative Dietrich. The first thing I'd like to do is thank Brad Lundell from the Schools for Equity and Education for providing the framework for the discussion that we're having tonight. One disclaimer here, we set up this PowerPoint minutes before you walked in. And as a teacher, and your teachers and people on the ed committees will appreciate this, this is showing right now, it's an example of the difference between someone who has gone through a wonderful formative assessment process first in her learning and someone who is going to be showing the summative assessment. And this is a high stakes test for me. So here we go. The purpose tonight, again, is to just give you a little background on equalization and equity and how that is related to property tax relief and how we finance our schools. A presentation to our joint committee here. This is an article actually from the Minnesota State Constitution, which says it is the duty of the legislature to establish general and uniform system of public schools, and that is what we're wanting to do and what we are trying to do with equalization. Minnesota has always valued an adequate and equitable education system. Equalization is one tool provided by the state that ensures equal educational opportunities are affordable to all Minnesota taxpayers. Well, and then we probably want to know, what is equalization? It means accounting for the disparities in property wealth across school districts. The state helps adjust for differing abilities of school districts to raise money from property taxes. And it's a concern. It's a concern because each school district has a different level of property wealth. The mix of property wealth in a school district determines the level of property wealth. And as an example, in a high property wealth district, these districts generally are going to have high levels of heavy industry and higher valued homes, while in a low property wealth district, these districts are generally going to have modest homes, small businesses, and agricultural property. And the fact is, this disparity is going to make a difference. In a district with high property wealth, they are going to be more likely to get taxpayer approval to get the better buildings, more competitive teachers and salaries, and a higher quality equipment. And now I'll turn it over to Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. So how has the system been made more fair? Well, the state has stepped in. Since 1991, the state has been doing what we call equalizing. We have been equalizing our referendums through like our operating levies and debt service levies, as well as others, but those are the two that we are going to focus on tonight because those are the most common. Through this state assistance called equalization, property taxpayers in low property wealth school districts have been able to more easily raise revenue locally. Well, how does equalization work? Number one, the state chooses an equalizing factor. Number two, the equalizing factor determines the state and local levy mix for an equalized levy revenue program. Third, many factors determine the level at which the state sets the equalizing factor that can be attributed to the purpose of the levy, the distribution of the property tax effort, or available resources. I think the best way to demonstrate this is to go quickly through an example. We have a scenario here based on the current equalizing factor, which is $476,000. We're going to call it Anytown Independent School District Number 3. Let's say that there are 1,000 pupil units, and that district wants to raise $500 per pupil, and that is what we call the amount that they can raise up to the first tier of equalization for this particular type of levy. And the referendum market value in this particular district per pupil is $238,000. What we do is we take the 1,000 pupil units times the levy amount, which is $500,000. That's the total referendum revenue. And then we take the market value of the resident pupil and divide that by the equalizing factor, and you get a percent, which is, in this case, in our example, 50%. So 50% of the revenue will be levy, and 50% will be aid. Obviously, the higher the percentage, the more the revenue is levy. The lower percentage, the more the revenue is going to be aid. So what if you want to raise over $500 of a per pupil unit in your referendum? There is a second tier of equalization, and there is also a cap, and that cap is $856 per pupil unit. The equalizing factor for this level of referendum is $270,000 of referendum market value per resident pupil unit. So as you can see, that is not as effective at the second tier of equalization. Now we go on to debt service. The state also assists low property wealth school districts with their building efforts through debt service, equalization, or levy. The debt service formula is more complicated than the referendum equalization formula. There are two tiers, but different equalization factors based on different types of tax base. I am not going to go into the details like I did in the debt service equalization, like I said, because it is very complicated, but you can get there are many people around here that can help you with that better than I, and I would recommend Tim Strom. So what is the problem? The current equalizing factors are not indexed to reflect the growth in property values. Consequently, the local tax effort becomes greater over the life of a levy. And in fact, this is why we are here tonight. The equalization factors have not been adjusted for growth in property taxes for some of the levies for 13 years. And the second issue with this, or the second problem, is that the state is going to be spending less in equalization aid from 2006 and onward unless we fix the equalizing factors. And tonight, those are some of the components that you will hear about many times over tonight. Here I have, I don't think there would be any presentation here that would be complete without a couple of bar graphs, so I did my duty. Here is the debt service. Here we have debt service. This slide demonstrates a steady decrease in state aid in debt service over time. This is due to the growth in market values in our communities, while the debt service levy equalization formula has not kept up with inflation. You will see, like I mentioned before, you will see many bills tonight that will provide an inflationary increase to this formula. The next bar graph demonstrates how the state aid for referendum revenue has decreased. Once again, this decline is due to the equalizing factor not keeping pace with the rising property values. Because the percent of state aid that has gone down, obviously the local taxpayers bear the burden, and their property taxes have increased. This graph demonstrates what happened to the state aid when the equalizing factor is fixed. And as you can tell in the first bar graph, that the state to local aid is about half and half. Well, you get to 2006 and you have less than one-fourth of that is now paid by the state. Then we have this chart, which is indexed for the equalizing factors. And as you can see, in the first bar graph, it starts out about half levy, half aid, and it continues that ratio, half and half. And that is what we are striving for. The state aid would remain constant over the life of a levy. The next slide, I'm not going to do anything with, but if you are like me and you just have a hard time keeping these levies straight and which ones are equalized and which ones are not, I just thought this was a nice slide to have in your back pocket throughout the evening. And in conclusion, equalization was designed to provide the equity among school districts as intended by the state constitution. Addressing the equalization factors will continue Minnesota's commitment to a high-quality education for all of its students. Thank you. And if you have any questions, you may ask Tim Strong.
Representatives Dietrich and Brown, thank you for that wonderful presentation. Really do appreciate that. And I think it really does set the groundwork for what we're going to do tonight, and you've covered the major issues that we need to talk about. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
At this time, we're going to hear a couple bills. Then there's a few groups that I'm going to give the option to speak kind of generally early on, but then you can't speak during any of the individual bills, so you'll have to make that decision. I think there are a few that want to do that, but, well, I guess I can't prevent you from speaking on individual bills, but we'll give that opportunity. Also, there will be no voting on bills. We're laying bills over, so there will be no votes taken here tonight. Representative Rukavina, I appreciate you being here, and would someone care to move House File 208? Representative Lincheski moves House File 208 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You don't have to worry about me for doing a PowerPoint presentation. I hardly know how to respond to my emails. Anyway, House File 208 is a pretty simple bill, and it deals with a subject that a lot of us around here have been trying to address. It just allows the school board to levy against any increase in the total health care premium costs that are measured for using 206, 207 as a base year. So members, I know that we're wrestling with this problem. There are a lot of school districts out there that aren't even able anymore to provide health insurance for their employees, and some of the copay and the premium costs are really hindering the ability of many rural districts, at least, and it's happening in the metro area also, to attract teachers. So this would allow a levy without having to go to the voters, and I'm tossing it out there, and I guess I'd answer any questions.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Rukavina, have you done an anecdotal situation so we'd get an idea what this might cost the taxpayers of a school district?
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it would be hard to do that because there are so many different plans that are offered in different school districts. Some school districts, are providing, I guess, Cadillac plans, if you want to call them that, in today's market, and some are providing Yugos. So I don't know how I would find that answer. I know that, a lot of costs for state programs have been shifted onto the local taxpayer and county taxpayer, and I know that. But what I'm trying to do with this is allow more money to be spent on kids instead of things like health insurance. So I can't give you...
Representative Erickson?
But Representative Rukavina, this will result in a property tax increase, possibly.
Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it's certainly me.
Representative Erickson.
Representative Ruka, why wouldn't you want this to be voter approved?
Well, Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, maybe somebody at this table or in this audience much smarter than me can answer the question why only school districts have to go to the voters to raise taxes for our kids. But if the county wants five more sheriffs, they don't have to do a damn thing. Or if the city wants a couple more buses or employees to do planning, they don't have to go to the voter at all. Counties and cities don't have to do that at all, but we make our school districts, who are taking care of our children, do it. And I think it's absolutely wrong. And I've never found the answer out to that. I suppose I don't know the answer. But you bet it would cost a little money and it goes on the taxpayers, but if the cities and counties don't have to go to a levy, then you explain to me, you're a teacher, Representative Erickson, explain to me why the kids should have to have, and the people that take care of our kids should have to go to an excess levy and go to the voters, but the cities and the counties don't. You tell me the answer.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Rukavina, you've served a whole lot longer than I have in this place. And I
think but you're smarter than me.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you. I think a lot of these practices were established under your leadership, so that's why I'm turning to you.
Mr.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Erickson, they were here in place in that manner when I got here in 1987, and it often puzzled me, but I didn't do anything to try to change it, and now I'm offering this bill out. But since you got here and you got an authority, I know property taxes have gone up over $2.2 billion in this state because you've shifted all those costs onto them, Representative Erickson. So just a little cost in my district isn't going to hurt any more than what you've done to them already.
And I thought levy night was going to be dry and technical tonight.
Well, so, Mr. Chair, yes, that's what I thought you started off with.
Representative Heigert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question has to do with Mr. Strum, if you would help me. My understanding is that the Minneapolis school district is doing it right now. They're levying for certain retired teachers, I think, health insurance. Was that voter approved, do you know, or that was...
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heidkirk, and there are two levies in statute that have been authorized, one for Minneapolis schools and one for St. Paul, that are fixed as a percent of a tax rate that allow levies for certain health care costs. There's also another levy that's available to a fair number of school districts that allows them to levy for certain health benefits costs. That levy's been decreasing over time, and I believe the total in that category is only about $2 million currently. So there are at least three levies out there that have some impact on health costs.
Thank you.
Is there any other question? Is there anyone from the audience that would care or dare to speak for or against this bill? Hearing none, we will lay over House File 208. Thank you very much, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, for your support.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Well, Representative Marquardt, I hope that Representative Rukavina will find it in his political will to give us an example as we move on so we have some idea of what cost this might have. You know, we know property taxes have gone up, but House Republicans are here today to say we want to reduce property taxes. So we want to keep that in mind.
Thank you. And with that, welcome Representative Swigum. And would someone care to move House File 681?
I will move it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson moves House File 681. Representative Swigum, if you would present your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for letting me follow Mr. Rukavina.
Yes.
Appreciate that. But since Rukavina left and Representative Erickson, you're still here.
Yes.
You can vote. He can't. You're not only smarter, you're also better looking than anything else you want to be than Rukavina. Mr. Chairman, members, the bill I have before you deals with property tax relief and reform. We were told to be very, very brief, so I'll try to be directly to the point of this bill. And then I also have a person from Murdoch, Minnesota, Mr. Kyle Peterson, a farmer from Murdoch, who drove in today to say a couple of words of, I think, support about the legislation. Mr. Chairman, the bill has two parts to it. House File 681, the first part of the bill exempts ag land and buildings from the school district levies for capital improvements. In the same way, Mr. Chairman, we do for the operating levy. If you remember back in 2001 when we did some significant property tax reform in Minnesota, which, by the way, did lower property taxes, Representative Erickson, and property taxes would be much higher now had we not done that reform. So I'll talk to you about that $2.2 billion. I'll give you a little education about that a little bit later. But we exempted the ag land from the operating levy. This would go forward and make the next logical step and exempt also the back 40 and timberland from the school capital levies, from the buildings themselves, from the bond levies of the schools themselves. I think a very, very important the provision to go forward to help our rural schools, and to Representative Growling, that she were here in her initial statement, I would tell you, members, that this property tax reform could be a dime in our local school district budgets. If we were able to exempt the farmland from the capital levies would be much more easily passed, I believe, in our local school districts. So I think I would make the argument to you that at least in rural Minnesota, and I think Kyle would make the same argument, that there would be more money for our schools, that the bond referendums would better be able to be sold and passed with this reform being part of law. Mr. Chairman, that's the first part of the bill.
Okay.
The second part of the bill actually doesn't have to do with the schools themselves directly. The second part of the bill is a provision which relates to ag land valuations. most of you are probably aware of the fact that ag land has escalated dramatically in the past few years in Minnesota, well beyond the capacity of that ag land to pay for, from a production value, a production standpoint, pay for the cost of the ag land. In my local area, we've had land sell for $5,800 an acre, $5,600 an acre, $4,900 an acre, $5,100 an acre. This is bare land selling for that type of price. And, of course, with the law, as it says, because assessors have to value ag land and evaluations of any type of, by the way, not just ag land, but any type of property, based upon current sales of that similar type of property, those farmers who are trying to make a living on the land and those farmers who are out there trying to produce corn, soybeans, sugar beets, wheat, whatever it may be, they see their ag land being revalued at $5,800, $5,600, $5,100 at those market values that affect the valuation of our ag land. It's not exactly what we consider a fair valuation. So my bill basically does this, members. It says, and by the way, I hold no ill will. I hold no jealousies whatsoever to anybody who wants to go and buy ag land for $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 an acre. I have no ill will. I think the market should work. Let them work. Some of it's 1031 exchanges, whatever. What concerns me is when someone goes pay $6,000 an acre and affects Kyle Peterson's valuation on his ag land that probably has a production value of $1,800 or $200 or $2,000 an acre, depending upon the price of corn, price of beans, the amount of the inputs, and whatever else may be involved. So the second part of the bill, members, just basically says this. We're going to put the valuation of farmland on one of two values, on the higher of two values, either what you paid for the land. If somebody paid $6,000 or $5,000 an acre for land, they obviously felt it was worth that. That's what the market demanded. That's what they paid. They felt the valuation was worth that. Or what the production value of the land is. The bill sets up a State Board of Agricultural Land Valuation made up of various commissioners, revenue, ag, economic development, and it creates a system, develops a system for developing that production capacity of individual ag lands around the state. So it'd be the higher one or the two. First part of the bill exempts ag land from the capital improvements of a school district. The second part is evaluation, I think, fairness. Kyle?
Okay. Mr. Peterson, please state your name and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kyle Peterson, and I farm in Chippewa County, Minnesota, which is west of Wilmer, Minnesota, about 20 miles. I raise corn, soybeans, sugar beets, sweet corn, and peas. I am in a family operation with my father, my sister, my brother-in-law, and we have two employees. I support this bill as written and believe that we need to change these items. School bonding needs to be on the house garage in 1 acre due to the fact that is who benefits, not bare ag land. This only hurts children because people vote down new facilities. In my area, there are schools right now very much struggling because of that issue. And people will not vote for that when it's going to cost the dollars that it is on land surrounding small communities. There's also a great disparity in land values at what is selling for, at what it is selling for compared to the value of what it is producing. In my area, land values have escalated to the point where it would take 10 to 15 years to cash flow that land if it was purchased. These values are due to 1031 exchanges and outside investors, which I have no objections to as well. Without changes, I fear many active farmers my age, but especially young farmers, will not survive because of land rents. The tax burdens will be the farmers, which we as farmers cannot pass on to the consumer. I graduated from high school in 1985, and I do not want to see some of the things happen to agriculture and small communities that I seen in the late 80s. There was a much disparity at that time with what was happening. I realize interest rates aren't where they were then, but these ag values have changed enough that it puts a real burdensome on farmers. Please highly consider this bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. I know, Representative Murphy, you had a question. If we would please keep all the questions to the first part of the bill, dealing with the debt service, I think would be good. Representative Murphy, did I had you on the list. Did you have a comment?
I had a question for clarification, but it doesn't have to do with the debt service.
Okay. Well, let's hold that off then if we can. Any other members? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a question for Representative Swigum. And Representative Swigum, I agree. This is a very serious problem, particularly with farmers going out and voting against those levies because their values are skyrocketing, and I understand that. And so on the debt service piece, I'm wondering if you can tell me your thoughts on, because Representative Marquardt and I have talked about this, and we've sort of struggled with it, honestly, is when we did the cabin off the school levy that you referenced, we did make them pay into the new state general property tax. And I think that the concept there was, and that may not have worked, as you now know, the cabins are having a tough time too, but the concept there was, you know, you're going to contribute in some way here. And I think the cabins had a pretty good argument because they could say, look, you know, we don't have kids in two school districts. We ought to pay those excess levies just in one school district because we're cabin owners, but our kids go to school here. So now in this case, you know, the farmers' kids, if they've got kids, they actually go to school in those school districts. And so I agree with you on your comments about, you know, letting the market work and trying to figure this all out. But I know especially the very poor property wealth ag areas, you know, they are voting against these levies. It makes sense to me why they're doing that. It's not helping the schools. But, you know, we've got the double problem here that of all the taxes, all the kinds of property in the state of Minnesota, the lowest effective tax rate is on ag already. Now, that isn't any piece to an individual farmer who has seen their values climb, but as effective tax rates go, it's the lowest of all. Do you have a thought on, would there be for the homestead part, would there be a contribution into a state general property tax, or how would you address what I think we all recognize bipartisanly is a big problem? And I haven't been able to figure it out. I'm just open to any thoughts you have.
Well, I'm Mr. Chairman, Chairman Lincheski, I'm certainly open to your concern and your flexibility. Let me place just a different perspective on it, just to, as you presented it, I would say not only were did we place the cabins off the local levy referendum and then place them in the statewide property tax, but the reason we did that, as you said, is the cabins don't have any kids in that particular school district. They may have kids in another school district. It was because they don't have kids using the school in that district, no service for the tax. You kind of want a relationship of in our society of getting something for what you pay for, and they were not going to use the schools. In the same respect, I think as Kyle said and I said, the back 40 or the back 80 or whatever you want to term it, doesn't use the schools either. It's the houses that use schools. It's the houses that have kids. The back 40 doesn't. So I think it is very fair when you look at, and again, Representative Greiling is back, so I will refer to her comment again, to help us get more money for schools, at least in rural Minnesota, I would tell you this change would be important. As the referendums come out now, I can't tell you the number of times I've been in a barbershop or in the VFW or someplace like that where the conversation gets to be, well, we'd like to help our school, we'd like to pass this, but it's going to cost the family in town $250 a year, and it's going to cost the family on the farm with no more kids $2,500 a year, or whatever the number may be, depending upon the referendum. Kyle, you've heard that comment too.
Many times.
So I think there's a fairness relating from the service to the tax that is paid, and that's the perspective I'd like to put on it. Now, out of flexibility, members and Mr. Chairman, I understand the difficulty of coming with numbers and coming up with targets, and I understand that it's going to be difficult to do everything for everybody. Representative Erickson wants to do something, Representative Dietrich wants to do something else, and we could look at this as flexibility. The way the bill is drafted, it goes backwards to take care of all the capital levies. I do have an amendment here And because of that, it has a cost of $17 million to the state per year, as you know, Mr. Chairman. I do have amendment from a flexibility standpoint that would do it for new bond capital levies from this point on into the future. You know, maybe what we voted for in the past were, you know, what it's part of law, we're stuck with, it's we decided that way, we decided when we voted, and maybe in the future we should change it for the future. But that's a flexibility that would not be quite as costly to you, Mr. Chairman, as you put your bill together.
Representative Swigum, would you like to offer that?
No.
But we'll keep it here as a possibility, and I appreciate that offer. And as we work through these bills, we'll certainly have that.
If I could work out your numbers for you, Mr. Chairman, I'd make it work. But I also know you're getting pressured from both sides of you. So, you know, I understand the need of flexibility and making things match.
I appreciate that offer. And Representative Earhart, you have a question.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I'm hearing the right thing here, but as I remember, cabins do pay for capital levies. And if that's
correct.
Yes. Yeah, because I think I heard someone say they didn't. They are exempt from the operating levies, and in exchange they pay the state general property tax. Now, maybe that's an exchange that we could exchange that type of thing with Agland, get them on the state general property tax levy and get rid of their operating.
Any other comments? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 681?
Mr. Chairman, I could have invited lots of people, but you told me we had 5 minutes, so I just took one.
I appreciate it. And he was an excellent representative, let me tell you. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, the chair will lay over House File 681. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, I've asked Representative Demmer if he would present his bill. It also deals with ag land exclusion. That way we can kind of keep them in topic. So, Representative Demmer, if you would care to proceed with House File 101, and Representative Demmer, as you're moving towards there, would you care to move your bill?
Sure, I'd like to move House File 101 for possible inclusion in the property tax division report.
Okay, Representative Demmer moves his bill for possible inclusion. And as we see the pages passing things around, and Representative Lincheski mentioned this the other night, also the work that our pages do, especially this time of the year as we get to crunch time on deadlines, is tremendous. So we do really want to thank all the work of staff and pages and everyone who spends the extra hours here. So Representative Demmer, if you would present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill, House File 101, is the same principles and the same arguments and the same need that you heard from Representative Swigum and his testifier apply to this. This is just another way to get at the same issue. We're talking about school capital debt levies, and my bill excludes bare agricultural land. There are some differences. My bill excludes the bare agricultural land from the tax base for the purposes of school capital debt levies. What is still included is what's called house garage 1 acre and the improvements. Now, the whole concept here is that a building site. So, for example, if a farm site has a house garage 1 acre and they have a dairy farm, a dairy barn, and they have some outbuildings, machine sheds, they might have a grain leg set up, all of those improvements in that valuation would still be considered part of the tax base. So there'd be a little bit of larger tax base. It's only the bare land that would be removed. Mr. Chair and members, I talked to some assessors, and they actually have these improvement valuations already on hand at the assessor's offices at your counties, but they lump those in for purposes today with the bare ag land. So when you get the ag base separate from house garage 1 acre, the ag base includes the improvements. If they had the requirement to report those separately in the forms, they could do that. So again, for an operating referendum, it's house garage 1 acre is the tax base. For school capital debt levies, it would be house garage 1 acre and improvements would be the building site. That's the concept. I'm going to assume that we can discuss some of the arguments, Mr. Chair. And you know the other thing I need to do, there is an amendment, Mr. Chair, that we need to adopt.
Representative Demmer, would you like to move the H0101A1 amendment?
Yeah, I do.
Have that motion, and would you tell us what's in that amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, Steve Hines just came to me today with this and said that we needed to add this language. It's a technical language thing that to get so that it reads the proper way, and can I just leave it at that?
That sounds good. Any comments or questions on the amendment, on the A1 amendment? Otherwise, I'm going to take the vote. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Mr. Hines indicated to me that this language is needed to make this work properly. And it was something that should have been in before. So it's technical in nature. Members, the other thing that I've handed out is there are two separate, and to try to simplify this without giving you a one-inch thick document that shows every single school district in the state and try to figure out what the change would be. We took two hypothetical, two school districts and did a hypothetical $18 million bond referendum. And the school districts are McLeod West and United South Central. And what we did, Mr. Chair, is, and I have McLeod West. Okay, here we go. What we did is we took two that are considered property poor districts, Mr. Chair, and two districts that have had a difficult time passing bond referendums, and we said under the current
Representative Demmer, sorry to interrupt.
Are they coming? Is everybody
members, do we have this hypothetical that Representative Demmer is talking about? Okay. Well, they're coming around now, so.
Okay.
Oh, we're supposed to have two. So members, do we?
Share.
Yeah, we can share here. So.
Do we not have enough?
Go ahead and proceed, Representative.
Okay, I believe the front page is McLeod West. Is that right? That's what it is in mind. We took an $18 million bond referendum, and we said the on the right-hand side there are two columns. The left column is under current debt equalization law. And an $18 million bond referendum, what my bill would do going down and how it would change the property tax payable on some different valuations down below. So if we go down below to a residential homestead with a value of, is everybody with me? We've got three values, $50,000, $100,000, and $175,000. These would be residential homes in the McLeod West School District. With property tax payable of $500, $1,000, and $1,750 without my bill. And then the corresponding change under current debt equalization for an $18 million bond referendum, a $50,000 home, the taxes would go up by $170. That would be without my bill. I'm sorry. That would be with my bill. It would go up by $170. Am I reading this right, Mr. Strom?
We don't have it.
Mr. Chair, I think there was a little mix-up here. The pages are quick making some copies, and there's four different sheets in front of
right.
you here. And those, if you maybe want to move on to something else until those copies are made, they'll be back in a minute.
Representative Demmer, you have a witness here.
Okay.
While we wait for that, would you mind if we did that
proceed.
At this time, and then we'll come back?
Good idea.
Okay.
I'm Christy Wetzel. I'm with United South Central School District in the southern part of the state, and I am the board chair. And we support, actually, I support this bill because in December of 2005, we tried to pass a $24.6 million bond referendum. And at the time, 70% of the cost of the bond referendum would have been paid by ag land taxes. And land valued at $3,000 an acre would have been charged, and it would have been taxed an additional $9.21 an acre. And we know from our district's history with regard to bond referendums that until there is some sort of for lack of a better word, equality among ag land versus homestead residential property, we won't pass a bond referendum. So we support this so that the shift, and there's been a number of scenarios that have been played out, but it does, you know, allow us the possibility of passing a bond referendum because ag isn't going to be wouldn't unduly be bearing the burden of the taxes.
Thank you, Ms. Wetzel. So, thank you. I think members are receiving this handout, and so Representative Demmer, do you want to continue on that? I think we're good.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Crow, if you could help me, I'm the two middle columns down below. I'm confused. There's something I'm not catching here. There was not labeled, and I can't recall which one of those columns is.
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair. The middle two columns would be the initial tax rate, and then the far two right columns would be the the middle two columns is your tax capacity.
Yeah.
And the two right columns are the tax under the current. So the middle column should be current and proposed. The same as the far two right columns are. Yeah. So your tax capacity, you can see how, obviously, the bill doesn't affect residential homesteads, so the tax capacity is the same for residential homesteads. And then farm homesteads, you can see how the tax capacity goes down with the change in tax base. And then you see the impact on the amount of tax in the far right two columns.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. That's the net tax capacity change as a result of removing the ag land is what we're looking at in those middle two columns. On the right two columns would be the effect of removing the ag land under current debt equalization law. And the far right column is removing the ag land under a proposal that would change the debt equalization level from 3,200 up to 8,000, the equalization level up to 8,000.
Okay. Representative Faust has a question.
My question is we've got the preliminary analysis here that talks about how many dollars this is going to cost the state. And in 2009, it's $16 million. Is that assuming that change in the levy happens from the 3,000 to the 8,000 you just talked about? And would there be any additional cost to the state if it weren't for that?
Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Denver, you can answer that, but you weren't finished with this, were you?
Actually, if I could finish this part, yep, Representative Faust, then we can come back to that.
Yeah, finish that and we'll come
back. Okay, I should explain. For United South Central and for McLeod West, there are two sheets for each of those scenarios.
Okay.
On the front one, where it says current law, that would be an $18 million bond referendum currently with no change with it, with the tax base still as exists today. That's what the additional tax would be on each of those parcels down below. Okay, so for example, a $100,000 home would show a $340 tax increase under current law today on an $18 million bond referendum. And a farmstead, just pick the middle one, the $175,000 house, $150,000 in buildings, and 320 acres. Would be $3,157,000 increase in taxes. That's at current law. Actually, why don't you flip over to the second page? It's the same numbers, the $3,157 and the $340 for the $100,000 home. My bill, removing the ag land with current debt equalization, would result in $1,154 for the farm instead of $3,157, and it would result in $448 for the $100,000 home instead of $340. That's with current debt equalization of $3,200. Okay. Then if you go back to the other side here, this would be the changes if we raise the equalization to $8,000. The home then would be $413 instead of $448, because debt equalization is picking up some of that. And the farm, instead of $1,154, would be at $1,064. And we also have for $175,000 home, and $175,000 home on the farm. You can see the changes there, and the tax that's being paid additionally because of the egg buildings.
Sure. Okay.
Everybody with me on that? Same thing for United South Central members, just to look as an example.
Thank you. Representative Faust, would you want to restate your question?
Yeah. My question is that we do have a paper showing how much additional cost this would have. If we do not have the proposed law, the $8,000 increase in levy, would that mean that there isn't an increase in cost to the state by doing this? It would just shift from one property tax owner to another.
Representative Demmer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, no, that's actually not true. Even if we did not move the equalization factor to $8,000, there would be a fiscal note on this, and I don't know which of these. I just got these tonight as I got here, and we got moved up in the agenda, so I didn't have a chance to look at it. The original documentation I had without changing it, we showed, I think, either a $9 or $14 million. Mr. Hines, if you could help me with that. We had a $9 million cost, I think, the first time, and then revenue came with $14. I think you were going to look at that.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Demmer, I haven't looked at that discrepancy, but I think we were working with some older data before, and the fiscal note in your packet reflects the Department of Education and Revenue's estimate of your bill as it stands alone without changing the equalizing factor to $8,000. So that would be an additional cost, you're correct, if you included that in your proposal.
Okay.
And these numbers are going to be worked out in division also as we look at that. So any other comments or questions on House File 101? Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I hesitate to ask this. Strom isn't here, but I'm sure that the two of you guys can do this. Doesn't the debt service equalization take care of a lot of the problem that this lady is talking about, trying to get a pass a capital levy? Excess levy, or whatever you want to call it.
Who wants that, Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, the debt service equalization program, the equalizing factor has gotten so low relative to the average property value per student in school districts that very few districts even qualify for debt service equalization any longer, and that's why the discussion of raising the equalizing factor to $8,000, which is about the state average, is being brought in. Because districts just don't qualify for debt service equalization anymore because of how low that equalizing factor is set at.
Well, Mr. Chairman, does anybody qualify anymore, or is it so low that it's...
Mr. Kroll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, yeah, there are about 30 districts that are still on it. 70 districts that still qualify.
Okay, is that... Mr. Chairman, is that a way to improve the situation? Without getting into all of this other stuff?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, you'll hear a bill that talks about just taking care of the equalizing factor without any reference to the question of ag land, which is a kind of a different question in the same arena.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Demmer, any closing comments?
Well, if I could, just a comment. Representative Earhart brings up a good question, and basically, if we leave the debt equalization as it is, by removing the ag land, we actually lower the property values of a bunch of districts so that they would qualify then. We'd be lowering that tax base, and so that's why you'd see more of those kicking in. By doing either debt equalization by itself or removing the ag land by itself, it partially addresses the issue. By doing both, I think we get to a closer level of fairness. I think that it would provide property tax relief targeted, and it would also be most helpful to our schools in trying to get some of these levies passed in some of the rural areas. In closing, I guess the goal of this is to get, we're not trying to say that schools should pass more bond referendums. What I am trying to get to is that schools that decide they want to do a bond referendum, they should be making the decision based on the merits of whether or not they need to upgrade their school and not be voting but yes or no based on how fair they believe the taxation burden is that result from it. So that's the goal in this, and quite frankly, also some targeted property tax relief. So, Mr. Chair, if I could, I also have Kevin Pape here from the Farm Bureau Association. I think he'd be happy to talk. And also Tom Peterson was going to testify also, but he said whatever Mr. Pape says, ditto.
That sounds good. We have several bills yet to go tonight, and so if we could all keep our comments very, very brief. Welcome. Please state your name.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Papp. I'm the president of Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. My wife, Julie, and I raise corn, soybeans, and boys on our farm in Blue Earth County near Lake Crystal. Lake Crystal is a school district since 1994. I've had six failed bond referendums, so we're real familiar with this topic. I want to thank both chairs for the and committee members for the opportunity to appear tonight. Minnesota Farm Bureau's policy is developed, adopted, and implemented by our membership in 78 county farm bureaus across the state. In the area of property taxes, we have two major concerns: how property market values are established and how local school debt service levies on ag land. The issue of how ag land market values are established is complex and seems to become more complex every year. I would encourage you to take the necessary time to fully study this issue and explore potential changes to our property tax valuation system that will lead to meaningful reform for farmers and other property owners in Minnesota. The number one piece of Farm Bureau's 2007 legislative agenda regarding property taxes is removing ag land from local school debt service levies. The current system of funding local school building projects is broken and needs to be fixed. The current system drives wedges between farmers and non-farmers in rural school districts. This occurs when a majority of the property in a school district is ag land and farmers are asked to pay the lion's share of the cost of a school building project. The end result in many school districts is the debt service levy bond referendum fail, and the ones that lose the most are the students. Exempting ag land from local school debt service levies fixes farmers' concerns, but it does not address the bigger issue, providing quality education, including facilities, for students in rural school districts. We strongly believe that this state needs to provide assistance to local school districts for building projects, especially the lower property value school districts. The state did establish the Debt Service Equalization Aid Program to address the lower versus higher property value question. Unfortunately, this program has not been adjusted to reflect current conditions and is not working as well as it could or should. We encourage this committee to support exempting ag land from local debt service levies and at the same time provide state assistance to local school districts for building projects. It appears to us that this assistance is especially needed in districts where one class of property makes up the majority of the property in that district. We are very aware of what happens when a majority of property is just ag land, but the same may be true if another class of property makes up the majority of the property in the district. In closing, on behalf of Farm Bureau members in Minnesota, I want to thank both chairs and committee members for devoting committee time to hearing our concerns and ideas for solutions. We look forward to working with you in the development of meaningful solutions in this session and would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Papp. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a comment to Representative Demmer and to the Farm Bureau and Farmers Union, and I know Representative Swigum had his bill, and I know Representative Coonan's talked to me about this over time, and Faust and Schumper and Welty's got the holistic approach today, and I know Representative Broad's carried bills on this, and this is a big concern. But I hope everyone can think financially now. the 114 school districts that are affected in all these bills, you know, is there some way to phase solving this problem? Are there, not for an answer, but just maybe all of you can start thinking about, are the 20 poorest school districts right now whose net tax capacity is so low, or the lowest 40 or 60, or is there some way to attempt, I think when we hear the wealthy bill, we'll understand the magnitude of the problem. But I think, you know, it is a kind of a poverty index, really, as it relates to property tax. And if people have ideas bipartisanly on how we solve this, we need to understand them, because I think the price tag gets so big to do every school district in a year that, I just represent Denver. I don't know if you have a comment on how we might begin to approach, because certainly within those 114 school districts, some are in much worse shape than others. And as Mr. Strom has told me, it's those school districts that are really sort of desperate for buildings that have another set of issues and then can't pass the levy. So if you have thoughts on how we might break this down a little bit, I'd appreciate knowing them.
No. Thank you. Anyone else? At this time, I'd like to call down Mr. Hagan, if I could, from the Department of Revenue, and just talk a little bit about how this, the impact there, if I could. So thank you, Mr. Hagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Hagan. I'm the Assistant Director of the Property Tax Division. And I'd just like to raise a flag on behalf of property tax administrators with a little bit of a concern about placing too much reliance on any component, one component of the ad valorem property tax system. We're pretty confident that assessors do a really good job of coming to a bottom line value that's an accurate reflection of what the property is actually worth. We begin to lose confidence when you start to look at a particular valuation component, be it land or structures, and trying to put a separate tax amount against that property. We begin to lose a little bit of confidence with the accuracy of that to accurately reflect the property's value. And we have a similar concern with Representative Squiggins' bill, which I'd hope to get down and make mention of the productivity value, too. Could I still weigh in on that real quickly?
Quickly, Mr.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't get down fast enough. I apologize for that. But we do get very, very nervous with any proposal that departs from the ad valorem concept of property valuation, which is valuation or taxation according to value. Any departure from that, no matter how good it seems at the time, usually is fraught with a lot of problems. Over my career with the department and over the years, we've oftentimes taken a quick look at the at a production value for farmland because it seems like such a natural, but without fail we've rejected it and because it's fraught with so many problems. We've filled rooms with doctors, professors, and even commissioners, and we've been unable to get past the obstacles that are proposed by it. In conjunction with our last year's Ag Green Acres report to the legislature, we had an opportunity to talk to a number of states and how they valued agricultural lands. And pretty much without exception, many of the states we talked to, departments, revenues in other states, cautioned us against embarking on a production value. We grant you that ad valorem taxation has its problems too, but we are concerned about a departure from that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So thank you, Mr. Hagan, for that. Anyone in the audience that would care to speak for or against House File 101? If not, Representative Demmer, closing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a quick response to Chair Lincheski. I appreciate your thoughtful response to that, and I appreciate the issue that we have and the problem we have with this. And I got some ideas, but I don't know if it's going to be worth throwing them out here. Maybe I'll huddle up with Mr. Hines or whatever, and we'll see if we can do some things. I think we have enough variables here that we can maybe do some things that address certain areas. And I think the main concern we want to make sure we address is fairness, that we aren't allowing some districts to do something that another district wants to, and it's hard to make those judgments. But I do have some thoughts, Mr. Chair. Thank you for taking the time on this, and not both in this, Representative Swigum's bill, and I know we all understand this. We're wrestling around with the different options, and I think we'll come with something, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. I know you've worked hard on this issue. Appreciate that. The Chair will lay over House File 101. Thank you. At this time, I know there's a few groups that generally want to make some comments, and I guess the point here is if you are willing to make those comments, and unless it's really, really compelling, you're going to forgo comments on individual bills. So if there's any groups that want to do that right now, you will have your 39 seconds to do that. But I appreciate that. And I a little bit longer. So if you'd state your name and...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. I really want to thank you for having this hearing tonight. It seems this year the House has it right and the Senate has it wrong. It used to be that the House never had people from the Education Committee on the Property Tax Division, and the Senate did. Well, now this year the Senate has no one on their Education Committee on their Property Tax Division. One of these years, I guess, we'll get it in sync. But I wanted to thank you for this opportunity because I think that it's great that this is being discussed here tonight in front of this committee. One of the things that's frustrated me over the years working with school finance is that the education property tax relief has always been the domain of the Education Committee, and local government aid, county aid, some of those things are always the domain of the Tax Committee. And it seems to me there should be a greater union of those types of efforts to come together, because it really does go, you know, part of it's, you know, really is property tax relief and trying to equalize yield that exists. And I think that it's great to have this conversation taking place. I also do want to apologize for something. Representative Dietrich and Representative Brown asked me if I had any materials that they could, you know, glean from in their presentation, and I did send them one, but I didn't revise it. And so the first-year referendum equalization is $700, and the referendum cap is $1,383. And so I apologize for not, you know, updating my pre-2005 PowerPoint on equalization issues. Wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to have referendum levies? Wouldn't it be a wonderful world? But the problem is we have right now is that 90% of the districts in the state do have referendum levies. And for many school districts, it's absolutely central to their operations. In fact, probably more central than they should be. We see districts now with upwards of 20% of their general fund coming from the excess levy. We believe that that's too large, but we also believe that the yield or the equalization that takes place needs to be more well-balanced throughout the state. In each of your packets, you'll see I've put together a bar chart for every district, for every member here from one of their home districts, and you can see the growth of the referendum market value in your district compared to the equalizing factor. Now, for folks who have referendum market value in excess of $476,000 per pupil, it's always going to be 100% levy. But for those of you on the second sheet there, you can see the dwindling amount of aid compared to the rising amount of levy that's going along with that rise in property wealth at the local level. Part of that is, you know, growth in property wealth. Part of it also is due to declining enrollment because we do things on a per pupil basis. So, and the other thing that's key here is that as districts are falling off equalization, one of the things that I hear from folks say, well, now you're falling off equalization, that must mean you're property wealthy. But when you're compared to your neighbors who have been growing at all this, at the same rate or sometimes even faster, you're still at a property tax disadvantage. So one of the things that equalization does do is try to, you know, even out those disparities that do exist between districts of varying levels of property wealth. Right now, I think that we're in a situation, and if you'll just let me digress for just 1 second, and I know my 39 seconds are up, but I would just say that we're in a situation now where there's probably one good quality of the property tax, and that's stability. And what we've got now in terms of education funding is we do not have the property tax's one strength of stability. And what we do have in its stead is this arbitrariness of the property tax, the ability to pass levies, the ability of the varying levels of property wealth, the falling off the equalization factor. So we've got this real hodgepodge, which has always been the problem with the property tax because it's very arbitrary. And when you think about, you know, doing the nexus of value and income, you've got a whole another set of problems that enter into the ad valorem tax issue. So we're in this real position where we've got to either, if we're going to bring the property tax back, let's bring it back in a stable manner. But in the short term, we need to make sure that the equalizing factors, which have not been adjusted in 15 years, do get adjusted upwards. In closing, I just would say, as you move forward this year, we'd hope to see, at least from Schools for Equity standpoint, kind of a three-legged stool as you look at the property tax portion of what you do in terms of education. debt service equalization, those equalizing factors should be raised, the referendum equalizing factor should be raised, and you should also do something that would help all property taxpayers throughout the state, something probably along the lines of the capital levy. And so I think if you look at those three areas, I think if you can, I'm probably going to go really high on the price tag. But I would say that those are the three things. If you can do something to really target the property tax relief to what Representative Demmer and Representative Swigman were talking about, and some other folks will be talking about with debt service, the referendum, a lot of folks here are going to be talking about that equalization factor tonight, but I don't think we can also forget the fact that we're going to have to do something because even districts with high property wealth are having property tax sensitivity much higher than they've had it before.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walsup with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I'd like to basically concur with what Mr. Lundell said about in the big picture here and what we're doing with property taxes for schools. According to former Revenue Commissioner Matt Smith, who was the architect of the big plan in 2001, at a conference this last fall, he indicated that the majority of new revenue to schools since the takeover is coming from property taxes. So as we're trying to maintain a goal of having the state pay for a general uniform system of schools, we've basically been going kind of in the wrong direction the last several years. I know that's due to large budget deficits and problems with the state budget. This year, however, the Minnesota Rural Education Association kind of wants to focus its efforts a little bit more in terms of property tax relief and equalization, primarily on the debt service levy. You've heard a lot of testimony about that tonight, and the reason we want to focus there is this is the largest portion of school debt right now. I think it's 36% of school district, property taxes. It's about 36% of school property taxes compared to 33% for referendum. Mr. Chairman, tonight you have a handful of bills before you that do some wonderful things, and I concur with what Representative Welty and Representative Lanning have on the table in terms of increasing the equalization factor for debt service up to at least the statewide average, if not higher, and then indexing that inflation factor to the growth in property values. And, Mr. Chairman, I need to make a note on that. Indexing those equalization factors is what's important because that's where we lost ground over the last decade. When property values have essentially doubled in the last 10 years, those equalization factors have been flat. So maintaining those equalization factors over time is what's important to maintain a state partnership with local school districts. Reducing the threshold where a district can get onto the debt service levy is important, too. Right now, a district has to assume more than 15% of local ANTC in debt before they even qualify. If you could reduce that down to 10 or even 5, I know the price tag on that gets very steep, and so you have to balance those components out with your budget target. Lastly, we need an important fix, and that's in House File 1083 that Representative Anzalis has brought forward tonight, and that's due to state tax policy, limited market value, we have a distortion that's being caused in the, for all of our levies, but primarily in the debt service levy, where districts aren't receiving the amount of equalization aid they should. Their districts are basically looking artificially wealthy to the state. So the state is saying you're more wealthy than you actually are, and so they're receiving less equalization aid. Those are three main fixes that we'd like you to focus your attention on in terms of moving the debt service levy forward. Lastly, Mr. Chair, I do want to express a little bit of concern over House File 101 and Representative Swigum's legislation that would remove ag land from the debt service levy. I'm not here to say let's not do something that would help pass bond issues. That's exactly what MREA is wanting to do. We do have a little concern, though, if you pull ag land out of the debt service levy, there would be a corresponding shift then onto homeowners in town. And if you can smooth that shift out, you might be able to move in that direction to some extent, but we do have a concern that if the issue is the community is, or the farm community is not willing to vote for bond issues because it's too much of a price tag, if you pull that all out and then put the shift, the cost shift right onto the homeowners in town, you haven't accomplished your goal about being able to pass the bond issue. So we need you to demonstrate some balance in that proposal as you go forward. Mr. Chair and members, those are the comments from MREA. I hope I stuck within my 39 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. As you've heard tonight, the debt service and the capital equalization formulas are totally outdated. They haven't been adjusted. They don't provide the relief that they were intended to provide because they haven't been adjusted for 15 years. They haven't increased with the growth in property values. You need to raise those equalization factors. You need to lower that threshold in order to make those formulas work at all. There'll be people when we get to Representative Dietrich's bill that can that will be able to show you what those changes have been year by year. Also, you've got a variety of capital programs. The deferred maintenance program, the health and safety program, the operating capital, that have grown up at different times and come in different bills. Some are in the tax bill, some are in the K-12 bill. They all have different equalizing factors. They don't work together. So you can have three projects going on in the same school building that are all equalized differently just because they run off of a different factor. The same is true to at least to a different extent for the operating formulas. They haven't been adjusted. They haven't been increased with the increases in market values. We would urge the legislature to address these inequities and update and index these formulas. If you don't index them, you'll be back in the same situation as the years go on. We don't think that you can solve this problem by just shifting from one class of property to another, taking one class off and shifting it all to the residential homestead. If you do that, you are going to have to make a much greater increase in that equalization factor to make sure that people are covered. So we would ask you to be careful if you were to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean. Mr. Grunquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Grunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and appreciate the opportunity to offer a few comments, and also would like to add my thanks for the joint hearing. I think it really is an important concept, important exercise. You all know how much interaction there is between property taxes and K-12 education. Mr. Chairman and members, clearly property tax relief is important. We understand that. You all heard that. Believe me, our school districts heard it in the election when 60% of the referendums failed this last fall. So we heard that message as well. We know it's important. I just want to go on the record, though, and make sure everyone understands. I think you all know this, but property tax relief is not new revenue for our school districts. All right? We just need to make sure we remember that. Every dollar that gets spent on property tax relief is a dollar that won't go on the formula, won't go to special ed, won't go to full day K, high school reform, or, you know, you name the list. Again, that is not to diminish the importance of doing something in the area of property tax relief. I understand we need to clearly... We do in the area of debt service and operating referendum. Second, we just encourage you, and I know both chairs here have really committed to putting together a balanced bill, and we appreciate that. And earlier testifiers talked about the one area in the school levies that would provide relief for all school districts and all citizens across the state, and that would be to increase the equalizing factor in the operating capital, which, as you know, a few years ago was greatly increased and caused a $58 million property tax increase statewide. So I would leave it at that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the time, members.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for those comments. Representative Daphne, you are next on the agenda. Are you ready to proceed?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Would you care to move House File 1692?
If I could please move House File 1692 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. You know, what I've got here really is plain English and common sense.
Currently, we'll take all sorts of that tonight.
Am I sounding like Representative Seifert? Current Minnesota law governing the wording of required. Can I start over?
It may. We'll rewind the tape.
Thank you, if you would, please. Current Minnesota law governing the wording of levy referendum ballots requires the districts simply seeking to renew an existing levy indicate on the ballot that by voting yes, residents are voting to raise their property taxes. This may be confusing to voters who entered the voting booth believing that they were voting to continue an existing property tax. Obviously, this makes for confusion on the part of voters in renewing levy referendum necessarily difficult, raising a bar where one needn't be raised. I think we just had a reference to 60% of the levy referendums in the last election being defeated. House File 1692 simply allows districts attempting to renew an existing referendum to indicate that clearly on the ballot.
Okay. Members, any questions? If not, is there anyone in the audience that would care to testify for or against House File 1692? If not, the chair will lay over House File 1692.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
Madam
Chair, members.
At this time, we are looking at three bills that deal with debt service equalization. And so, if Representative Kalin, Representative Lanning, Representative Welty could go, and what I'd like you to do is just explain your bills, and then we'll have testimony, and then you can kind of move in and out as you want. But if we could just go over the bills first, because I know they're similar basically in structure, the numbers and equalization levels change, but we'll start with Representative Kalin, and if we could have a motion to put these three, can we do them three at the time? We'll take them at, Representative Lucheski moves House File 836 for possible inclusion. Representative Garofalo moves House File 837 for possible inclusion, and Representative Morgan graciously offers House File 839. All right, before the committee. So with that, Representative Kalin, we'll start with yours first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, committees. Appreciate your time tonight. I think all three of our bills go to the basic notion that we've heard all night, that choosing between good schools and a fair property tax system is a false choice. And what these three bills aim to do is get at that. And I think we sort of have the three tenors here, and we can choose which one of the tenors we want to actually star in the show in the end.
You can do all the singing.
I think Representative Lanning, the public doesn't want me to do any of the singing, but I was going to say, who's bass, baritone, and tenor? Anyway, I think I'm a baritone, Representative Erickson. But in terms of the bass, baritone, and tenor, my bill is actually kind of the baritone, sort of the middle of the three, I believe. What my bill would do is actually eliminate the third tier of equalization. Currently, we have an unequalized tier, as we've heard before, the 15 to 25%. Tier, and then the top tier above that. What my bill would do is actually move the unequalized tier down to 10%, and then set the equalization factor for everything beyond that at 120% of the adjusted net tax capacity per pupil, which currently is somewhere in the neighborhood of $8,300. I believe the price tag is, I can't remember, Mr. Chair, if it's $27 million or $32 million. But it's somewhere in that neighborhood, and I see Mr. Strom sort of nodding his head. I'll just quickly tell you that one of the reasons that I'm interested in this bill is not only as the representative, somebody has to have the lowest funded district in the state in aggregate total per pupil funding. This term, it happens to be me, which in the district of North Ranch. And this bill obviously would bring somewhere in the neighborhood of $582,000 to my district, but it actually would help dozens and dozens and dozens of districts across the state. So not taking a parochial interest, but really looking at the statewide perspective, I believe all three of these bills do a similar statewide approach. I think that whichever one of the three this committee chooses in its wisdom, I think any of them will take a real step forward towards leveling the playing field, returning the debt service equalization to what it was intended, and the 120% factor would actually leave in an index for inflation as we go forward. So I think it's a real wise move not to set it at a fixed number, but have it be a percentage. So that's my song, and now I think we can leave it to Pavarotti and Carrera here to continue the next
thank
stanza.
You very much. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Madam Chair, and members. House File 837 is about property tax relief, but it's also about an important education policy. And that policy is, should the state be providing incentive help to local districts to improve their school facilities? We use that policy premise to sell a major bond issue in our community. Back in 2002. Our voters, by a narrow margin, approved a $64 million bond issue which is huge. Basically, totally revitalized all our schools, built two new schools, and redid schools that had long been neglected. And what we find ourselves in now is that the debt service equalization we thought we were going to get has been dwindling. In fact, in the last 5 years, we're getting now $2 million a year less in debt service equalization aid than what we had the first year that our bond issue was taking effect, that we had to do debt service. And this last year, coming into 06, payable 07, we had to increase our levies overall by $2 million for our schools, huge increase, and $730,000 of that was directly tied to the debt service equalization. Well, what's caused this? As you've heard already, the fact that the equalization factor has been frozen is a big part of it, and also rapidly increasing property values that all of us have experienced. And for our district and many districts, declining enrollment. This year, for the first time in 10 years, our enrollment has increased, but we were on a declining enrollment trend. And this hasn't been shared yet, but if you go back to 2000, 20% of our school districts were not eligible. They were off formula. You know what it is today? 80%. So 80% of our school districts cannot follow what I think is a good education policy and the state providing some incentive for districts to keep their facilities improved. My bill does two things. It takes the first tier to 100% of the statewide adjusted net tax capacity equalizing factor. That would bring it from 3,200 presently to 6,900, which is the approximate statewide average currently. And the second tier would be 116% of the statewide. And, of course, in both cases, the important feature here is this is indexed, so that as property values increase, we would also see the equalization factor increasing as well, the result of that increasing. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members, with my bill, there are 82 school districts in Minnesota that would benefit. The estimated cost in payable 09 is about $13.1 million, and we urge your adoption. I do have one testifier. Our school superintendent is here and would like to also speak to this bill.
Thank you very much, and when everyone's done, we'll have the testifiers come down, too. So thank you very much, Representative Lanning and Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Mark Wharton. To members of the committee, House File 839, which you have before you, will modify the debt service equalization program by creating just two levels of debt equalization, or two tiers. Under this bill, school districts must pay the first 15% of the building debt levy in relation to the ANTC. The state will provide aid for all debt in excess of that 15% of ANTC at 100% of the average tax rate per pupil unit. That's just as Representative Lanning's bill is doing as well. The current statewide tax capacity per pupil unit, as Representative Lanning alluded to, is at $6,896 or $6,900. This bill will take effect for taxes payable in 2008, so the impact upon our budget will not appear until fiscal year 2009. House File 839 will increase the aid payment to 81 school districts across the suburbs and throughout greater Minnesota, a true statewide form of property tax relief. The current system of statute does not provide for inflation, therefore districts are less likely to receive debt service equalization as the years progress, as has been alluded to before. The current statute provides debt service equalization by tiers at $3,200 and $8,000, and these amounts in the formulas are not adjusted to inflation. Initially, when debt service equalization aid was paid out to districts, the state spent approximately $40 million per year. Now the state spends approximately $11 million per year. And within a few years, very few districts will qualify for aid. With the passage of this legislation or the other legislation that's been proposed up here, the state can count on current expenditures of about $11 million per year, within, in under this bill, with an anticipation of an additional $11 million per year in new aid costs, because we predict that more schools will pass their referendums knowing that they're going to be able to count on state aid. Therefore, the total cost of the state would be approximately $40 million per biennium, or about half of what we used to pay out for debt service equalization. I really believe that the school districts will now be able to tell the residents of the districts an approximate amount of aid that the state will pay towards the cost of the project. This hasn't been the case in the recent past. Current debt levied by districts across the state totals approximately $650 million, and only $11 million of that is equalized aid. It's a very small percentage. The testifiers that will come down on behalf of my bill, and also they'll probably be speaking on behalf of the other bills as well, really we want a comprehensive fix to this. No matter if you take some elements out of Representative Kalin's bill or Representative Lanning's bill or my bill or Dietrich's bill or whoever's bill comes before us, we need a fix. And the testifiers will be Don Hanlon from the Chatfield School District in southeast Minnesota, Dean Peterson, treasurer of the Uppsala School District in central Minnesota, and Roger Warner, superintendent of Centennial School District in Anoka County, which would be a suburban school district. So we really want to show you that this is a statewide issue. And if you look at the map that MREA prepared for all of you, you can see the 81 school districts that are now affected. But if you can imagine what the map is going to look like when we pass debt service equalization, we're going to color in a few more of those districts. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, Representative Kalin, do you have testifiers?
The superintendent of the North Branch Schools, Dr. Rodney Reisenauer, was hoping to be here, but he is in the process of, as I think a lot of our school districts, he is stepping down, reaching the rule of 90, and so they are interviewing superintendent candidates tonight. I can just tell you very quickly what he would say. We've heard his song and dance a couple hundred times, and that is that Chisago County not only has the ignominy of having the lowest funded school district in the state in per pupil funding, but also that we have the lowest commercial industrial property tax wealth in the state as well, at about 6% as our CI ratio. So we're sort of between a rock and a hard place when it comes to taking care of our schools. Four referenda have gone down in North Branch. But it doesn't stop them from doing some innovative work that, in fact, we have a really interesting proposal for 6 second shift certified teachers, kindergarten and first grade, to do home visits and parent training for targeting the lowest 25% achieving kids on their entry screening to kindergarten. So they're still thinking outside the box and not just sitting and wallowing in despair. And singing a dirge, as it were, but trying to be proactive, and I think that's what Dr. Reisenauer would bring to us today. So
thank you very much.
He has less hair than I do, so he'd be happy that someone with my hair is telling his story.
Representative Lanning, I know you have a testifier here.
Yes, I'd like to call Dr. Larry Nyblad, who's superintendent of schools for Moorhead School District 152.
Dr. Nyblad, welcome to the committee. Good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Markford. It's good to see you also. I might just quickly mention that greetings from Clay County in northwestern Minnesota. I know you missed that place when you're down here. Temperatures are warming up there. I just have to tell you, as I left Moorhead this afternoon, I swung through Dilworth, and I noticed you've been so busy you were neglecting your driveway. So with these mild temperatures, I did chip off a foot of snow and ice from the driveway.
Thank you for that.
I think with these mild temperatures,
Dr. Nyblad, thank you.
I'm about me, the other two people will be off there as well. Anyway, thank you, chairs and members of the committee. I feel in some ways that I'm going to be very redundant, so I think I will condense my remarks. I'll probably just remind you that there's a handout that I prepared that has Moorhead Area Public Schools at the top, and I'll probably just walk through a couple of those pages for you. In some ways, I do feel like I'm stating the obvious, but I guess for decision makers, when the obvious is there, it's easier to make a decision. It's interesting that all the voices here tonight seem to be echoing the same theme. The background assumptions on that first page of the handout, I think, have been mentioned fairly completely tonight. The constitutional imperative of a uniform system of education in this state, the concept of equity, especially as part of that three-legged stool that's been mentioned. And the history of Minnesota, of course, starting with that Skeen case in 92, which resulted in the legislature taking action, which created the implementation of the program that's being talked about tonight in 92 and 93. There was, of course, also in 01 some significant improvement made to that program with the Tier 2 equalization being added. I just mention that history because if something obviously is not addressed with this program, it appears that history may be repeating itself, and we're back to where we were in 1992 as a state. The two key points I want to make are on the front page. The first one is that a fundamental shift in the policy direction has occurred. You've heard that many times tonight. The second one is that the shift from state support to local burden will result and has resulted already in diminished support for local referenda and, of course, increase those inequities. Themes you've heard many times tonight. So let me quickly walk through my handouts. I'd like to skip over one and two because you've heard that data already tonight. If you could turn to handout three, this is a putting a face, I guess, on what's being talked about from our school district's experience. As Representative Lanning already mentioned, Moorhead had a significant bond referendum in 2002, $64 million. We had an aging infrastructure. There had not been a school built in Moorhead for 35 years, despite the fact we serve about 6,000 students. At the time we had the approval from our voters, we were projecting about a 47% subsidy from the state in terms of aid for the debt service. You can see in 02-03 we actually saw 40%. Since that time, you can see what has happened, the erosion down to this year, 9% debt equalization aid, 91% local levy. If you turn quickly then to handout four, as Representative Lanning has already inferred, we did see a $2 million increase in our local levy, and this was very confusing to those people who were paying attention to it. We put this slide together really for a newspaper reporter who could not understand how a school district that had a 0% increase in its expenditure budget was deficit spending to the tune of $2 million would still increase taxes $2 million. Well, the reason, of course, is in front of you, and a large part of that is because of the diminishment of debt service aid to our district. If you could turn then to handout five, I just want to make an emphasized point with you about the effect that this will have on our ability to pass future referenda. Handout five is a copy of one of the pages of a document that was put together to provide information to our citizen voters as we prepared them for voting on the referendum in 02. And if you look about mid part of the page, it says, will local taxpayers pay for the entire construction project? As you can see, there was a significant incentive in our case for our voters to support this referendum because we were projecting that the state would pay for 47% of the cost. I'd quickly ask you to look over to the side of that as well and see the little chart that shows the debt service equalization program. One of the fundamental questions we had during the referendum information campaign was, okay, you build these schools, and incidentally what we did is we didn't just build schools, we modernized all schools in the district. We went from 11 schools to 7 schools because we wanted operational efficiency as well as modernization, and we were at capacity, and we are currently. And one of the questions our voters asked repeatedly was, okay, we build these schools, we build this field of dreams, you grow the community, which incidentally has happened. We've had 3 record years of housing permit growth in Moorhead community, going from previous to the referendum 30 to 40 building permits a year to now 500 to 550 permits per year for 3 years in a row. So we have the field of dreams effect going on in Moorhead. But what our voters asked, okay, you build these schools, you build the field of dreams, the people come to Moorhead and fill up our schools, are we going to have to pass another bond referendum to build another new school or set of schools? And we said, yes, likely we will, because our schools are going to be at operational efficiency and capacity. But don't worry, because we'll bump into Tier 2 and the state will pay for 75% of the cost of those new schools because of the extraordinary effort you taxpayers are already putting in. Obviously, we cannot say that any longer. You know, if you look at the numbers of the sheets that have already been distributed, if I were to go to the voters today with an information campaign for a new school, which likely we will have to do very soon. In fact, we purchased 3 parcels of property to date to build new elementary schools in Moorhead because of the growth that we are projecting. I would have to tell them, you'll pick up 92% of the cost of that new school. the state's going to pick up 8%. And, oh, by the way, it might be less next year. Okay? So a very difficult thing to do. I'd like to refer you quickly to page or handout 6 as well. And just the second kind of bold-faced category on the left-hand side of that page, is the state subsidy secure? Interestingly, many of our voters question the security of state funding when we went to them and asked for their support. And we weren't quite sure how to answer that, so we did some research legislatively with the commissioner and even with the governor's office. And what we found out was that in the history of our state, never had the state backed away from this kind of subsidy. And so we told them that. We don't feel very good about telling them that right now. If you turn quickly then to handout 7, the same thing was reiterated as well in terms of the economic effect. My final point, I guess, would be about handout 8. If you look there, this was a little news release that was put out post-referendum. You can see that the voters in the Morehead School District did approve the $64 million bond referendum. I called it a landslide election because, like I said, we didn't have a positive vote in 35 years. But if you look at the vote, 51% of our voters said yes. And this was despite the fact we hadn't built a school in 35 years, despite the fact that we had deferred maintenance on our entire infrastructure top to bottom, despite the fact that realtors in our community said they were having difficulty selling a home because of the lack of curb appeal of our schools, despite the fact we had not only our city council, our chamber of commerce, but nearly every organization in the community, including churches and everyone, provide written endorsement to this referendum, we had 51% support. That's with a 47% projected subsidy from the state. Needless to say, I don't think we'd have that success if and when we have to build our next school, which I think is going to be within the very near future. So again, thank you for your comments. I appreciate the attention you're giving to this matter, and if you need any support from school administrators to work on any subcommittees, I'd be happy to do that. I'd also stand with Representative Lanning for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Dr. Nyblad, for really stating the highlights of the dilemma we're facing here and how it's impacted more at school districts. So thank you. All right. I think we're going to move to Representative Welty, and I know you've got three testifiers. Could we just really focus on I get told because you got three testifiers.
Yeah,
so.
Chairman Mark Ward, I instructed all my testifiers to keep it to 2 to 3 minutes because I knew that you had sent out the note that said 5 minutes or less. So we're trying to hold it.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dr. Hanlon from Superintendent of Chatfield Schools, and I want to thank you for listening to my story. You've heard many facts and figures tonight, but let me tell you the story about Chatfield. Chatfield was a district that in 1996 attempted its first time to pass a referendum to build a new building. 5 times later, we were one of the 60% of the schools that didn't pass for the 5th time last fall the referendum. Our new building was built in 1960. That's when we occupied it. Our old building was built in 1918. It continues to be an issue both for safety and for the quality of education we're able to provide our students. One of the primary issues that has been brought to our attention as I've been in the community, and even though I've been there a short time, debt equalization has been one of the prime topics that we've talked about. That's why you're here tonight. You've heard it from many different people, many different sources. You can see that it's a very serious situation. Chatfield is a school district that is smack dab in the middle of the schools across the state of Minnesota. There are about 340 school districts. We're district number 170. We're a district of 900 students, and so there are half the school districts are larger than us, half the school districts are smaller than us. We're 20 miles from Rochester. One of the dilemmas that we face, which makes our next election a high-stakes election for us, is all the surrounding school districts have been successful, for whatever reason, in passing elections. They have new buildings, they have new additions, and we're seeing that our parents are going there from Rochester, they're going from the surrounding communities. Unfortunately, the parents from Chatfield are now phoning those area districts and they're saying, can we open and enroll our students there? Since you have not been able to pass a referendum, we'd like to send our students elsewhere. That's a high-stakes test for us. What I think we're facing in Chatfield is a situation of voter fatigue. They've seen us come back 5 times in the last 9 years. We've not been successful. And so the story continues to be the same. We need some debt equalization. We need some fairness for the farmers because we have a heavy ag community there. It's critical. It's critical for our town. It's critical for our students. It's critical for the education of the students in that area. That's what we're here for. I'm a superintendent of schools. I'm dedicated to the students. I'm enthusiastic about what we do, but we need your help, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hanlon. Mr. Peterson, good to see you before the committee, and first of all, I want to thank you for all the work you've put into this issue and graphs you've provided and really took a good look at this, so thank you, sir.
Dean Peterson, I'm the school board treasurer from Upsala, Minnesota. I like to say that Upsala is the canary in the coal mine on the debt equity issue, debt equalization issue. We did build a new school about 5 years ago, and due to the fact that it being a small district, basically made up of one complex, K-12, when we built just about everything. So we've got a high debt load per pupil unit, and at the same time having one of the highest debt loads per pupil unit, we have one of the lowest ANTCs per pupil unit in the state. So we have been dying on this. We came down last year. We sent our school board chair. We sent our superintendent down here, and they got some people kind of revved up, and we didn't get too much done. So this year, I've been working 5 hours a day on this for 3 months, and I am the guy that gave you this, and I'm going to take you through this in 3 minutes if you want to hang on tight, and I will answer questions. But this is going to allow you to understand this issue. My background is math and computer science. I'm in the automobile business right now. My educational background is math and computer science, and a lot of that has to do with taking all this massive amount of information and putting it down where people can understand the ramifications of what they're going to do. The cover is, in the nutshell, what Mr. Welty asked me to bring today. You can see on the left, at the time of our election, the school was going to pay the big pink pie or the red pie, and we were locally going to pay the blue, and today you can see how much smaller that pie has become. We've got $800,000 to $900,000 worth of bonds coming in every year that belong to the taxpayers of our district, and we thought we were in partnership with the state. If you open to the next page, you can see the progression, and you can see this pie deteriorating over time. The movement is pretty dramatic. By the way, these full cover color charts were not produced at the expense of our SOD school. These are privately done by our board and local business people and entirely funded locally. There's no school money in this, so I don't want anybody saying you guys have better things to do with your money. Okay, next page, you can see the same thing in another graphical form. You can see the increasing share of local levy on the blue line. You can see the decreasing share of the state commitment on there. The next page is where it gets... We hired the best people in the state. You've heard this over and over again today. We went to the voters. We hired Eilers & Associates, very well respected. This was what we presented to our voters, and it shows the same ratio holding through till 2027. It doesn't match our pies very well. And we have a great working relationship with Eilers, but again, these are smart people, and this did not obviously forthcoming. We've got extra copies that are available to anybody that wants one, anybody in the crowd. The board members have extra copies, and again, we're going to make it through this fast. League of Minnesota Cities property tax calculator, you can see that we are indeed almost double the state average. There are places that are worse. It's only as good as it is because we can't pass an operating levy in Upsala. We failed twice. This is crucial to our, besides spending more than we took in, largely as a result of not passing an operating levy. The next is a chart that you are going to see repeatedly in my presentation. This you can see the yellow line, which is your folks from the wealthy upper 95th percentile ANTC. You can see how, as their homes inflated in 2001 when my graph started on a $100,000 home, they're still paying almost exactly the same money after 10 years. This is projecting out until 2009. It continues to get worse, of course. The blue line is the state average ANTC per pupil unit district. You can see that's also a somewhat of an increase. Upsala, who is a bottom 5 to 10% ANTC district, you can see our cost to our individual taxpayer on their home, the same home, went from $300 up to almost $800. Meanwhile, while the folks in Wayzata and Edina are enjoying a flat cost. You can see the...
Strike that from the record.
Anyway, you can see the Gopher Valley story. I shouldn't have said Edina. I should have said Bald Eagle Heights. Okay, we've got a story we made up here. And for people who don't like charts and graphs, we've got Gopher Valley, the lowest ANTC district. We have got Middle Prairie, who is the middle ANTC district. And we have got Bald Eagle Heights, the high ANTC district. And I'm not going to read you the story. Key to take away from this story is to see what's happening in Upsala when we're trying to pass operating levies. Our property taxpayers this last year were taxed an excess amount, more than they were promised, of around $250,000. They saved themselves $100,000 by not passing that operating levy, and then but the school has now cheated out of 270 grand. So between excess tax costs and loss to the school, we got $420,000 a year in a town with 400 people and 400 people in school. Okay. And then we talk a little bit about some of the cycles that happens as your school deteriorates, funding deteriorates. Okay, we have an article from NPR. I've been working with the press. Tim Post from NPR came out and did a very nice piece. I'm not going to read you his article.
Mr. Peterson, is there? Take us to just a couple charts, kind of, that we really should zero
okay,
in on.
Okay, well,
we can look at this later.
And I'm going to take it to a chart where everybody in the room can see where their district is. Okay, we're going to keep on going. This is a chart produced by Mr. Melchers in attendance tonight. This talks about the declining amount of those things. I'm going to stick with the... okay, next chart. Effect of the frozen debt equalization formula on a $100,000 Minnesota home. Homeowner cost for $1,000 debt per pupil unit. Okay, that is a very average amount of debt service. Part of what I have done to make this easier to understand, you got to know that when you start analyzing these schools... the house has a nice manual, tells you how to calculate this stuff. If you try to calculate your local tax, your calculator will give you an error message. You multiply your ANTC by your local ANTC per pupil unit, and it'll go into the error mode. Okay. So we've done is we've broken it down. We've done the algebra on it, breaking it down. So we're analyzing communities by the amount of ANTC per pupil unit. Very good way to compare people because this is a very... compare districts because this is a very accurate way to do it, and it keeps the numbers where you can understand it. It allows us an upslit to compare our district to a district like Centennial that has a very same thing. Okay, $1,000 per pupil unit. Again, you can see on the charts, it's just like the one I showed you before, the 95th percentile, the Bald Eagle Heights folks. They started out paying only $100. We started out paying over $200, and that was okay. You know, nobody complained that anybody's getting a better deal in Bald Eagle Heights back in Upsala. We were very thankful for that state aid that made this school affordable for us. You can see how those folks, their taxes have stayed almost flat, just a few bucks more over all this time. The middle ANTC district is at a moderate increase, and yet you see the dramatic increase in costs. We told the taxpayers on that. This is a slightly different example because this is, of course, more generic than Upsala. But you see in this case, on a $1,000 debt service, a low ANTC district, they would tell their taxpayers it's going to cost them two. It would wind up costing them more than double that amount. The next page, the same exact chart except done for a district with a $2,000 per pupil unit debt service. That's a very high district. Upsala is 1,900. We're among the highest, but it's important to compare ranges. Okay, so we look at the first charts. All the $1,000 charts are average amounts of debt service. If you have a community like Upsala or maybe like Centennial where you are creating almost all the facilities new, if you have a St. Cloud or you have a Moorhead where you can produce one or two schools and still have a bunch of other ones operating, you can keep that number down around $1,000 or $500 or $600 a pupil unit. And the very small schools and some of the ones that need to replace all their facilities, they will wind up around $2,000 per pupil unit. It's important when you compare these bills to look at the effects on both types of districts. The next page is
Mr.
debt
Peterson,
service.
I'm going to ask you, what would you like? I mean, we can look at this later, and this is great information, and I think it lays things out just super. But what do we need to do?
I'm just going to leave you, you now have enough, you can look through all this. The rest of it's self-explanatory. You can see the percentages of debt service historically, all these things, I've got it all laid out. You'll all be able to understand this very nicely. What I would like you to take away, I'd like to go to the very last page, and this is a little different kind of graph that I may need to explain a little bit, but this helps you understand unequalized Tier 1 and Tier 2 very nicely. Everybody talks about how complicated this is, but once you start looking at it and taking it apart and looking at it in color, you can kind of see. The yellow line, again, is the wealthy district. The medium blue line is an average district, and the pink line is the poor district. And you can see how moving across the chart, 100, 200, 300, 500, up to 20, up to over $2,000, that debt service per pupil unit, okay, local debt service, how that line pulls up that local homeowner tax, debt service tax per $100,000, okay, on the left. So you can see the problem in a nutshell is if you want to build $2,000 worth of a debt service per kid in Bald Eagle Heights, it costs you a little over $100, and in Gopher Prairie, it costs you about $7, okay? Now, the equalization happening is the darker colored lines that depart from the bottom of those light colored lines. On that pink line, you see the darker red line leaving it at just around $100 of debt service tax, and it heads off at an angle. That angle is the slope of the ratio, okay, between the equalizing factor and your local ANTC. Then it hits Tier 2 and it flattens out. If I wanted to leave the committee with anything, I would say do not abandon the two-tier plan. By all means, okay? That's what I'll say because it's, okay, the second thing, be very careful in indexing in low percentages because if you take Agline off the table, you're going to reduce the statewide ANTC, all this 116 and 120. We could easily go backwards off the 8,000 on the second tier indexing at 116 because that's where we're at, okay? We don't want to lock in a bad situation. In case the real estate market continues to be poochy or you guys take Agline off the table, that statewide ANTC is going to drop and we're going to get less than we do now. At the minimum, put a back door on it where you say 116 or 8,000, whichever is less. The third thing I would say, we again are an agricultural community. I'm not here to testify on either of the first two bills, but I would say get rid of a house garage and an acre, maybe go to a house garage and 320 acres. That would be a compromise for us.
Mr. Peterson, thank you so much. I really do appreciate all your work on this and giving us a perspective in colors and graphs. Thank you much.
Representative yes, Marquardt, members of the committee, my name is Roger Warner. I'm superintendent of schools in Centennial School District, and I will make my remarks very brief. There's a handout that will be coming around to you. For those of you who are not aware of Centennial School District, we are a third-tier north suburban school district, and if there would be a portion of a message that I would want to pass on to you, besides thank you for taking on this issue, it would be to say that this is indeed a broad statewide issue. It is a metro issue, it is a large greater Minnesota issue, and it is a small rural school district issue, as has been attested to you this evening. Centennial School District is a school district that experienced rapid student enrollment growth. We are largely a residential district. We have very small commercial industrial property, and it is a district, as you can see from the handout, that grew from 4,000, roughly 400 students in 1990-91 to approximately 7,000 students today. Our student enrollment is flat, but over the course of a 15-year period of time, the district increased in population by 59.4%. During the course of that growth, this school district found itself in need to build two elementary schools and a middle school and add additions to each of the remaining of its secondary and elementary schools. Those issues, basically all four elementary schools, middle school and high school, currently have outstanding bonded indebtedness. At the onset, when those bond referenda were passed, the equalization, debt service equalization, was approximately 43.5%. Over time, that equalization has diminished to this past year, 14.5%. And as you can see from the bottom portion of the handout, the impact that has occurred on the property owner. The increase has been over 72.5% increase in levy on $250,000 home, while the aid that has been provided has been reduced by 68.6%. You can look at the rest of the information. It confirms that what you heard from Representative Lanning, you heard from Representative Dietrich, you've heard from other presenters here today. I don't want to repeat the story, bore you, tire you. This is a significant issue for our school district. And again, I say thank you for addressing it. It needs to be done.
Dr. Warner, thank you so much. And I appreciate all the testifiers laying the importance of this issue out. And I will ask at this time, are there anyone in the audience that would care to speak for or against House Files 836, 837, or 839? If not, Representative Lanning and Representative Kalin, Representative Welty, thank you so much for bringing this important issue forward. And the chair will lay over House Files 836, 837, and 839.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for taking the time to hear about this issue. And we just hope that you analyze all of the bills, including Representative Demers and Dietrichs and everyone else, and try to put together the best debt service equalization and proper tax relief plan you can.
Thank you very much. We'll now move to House File 1083, Representative Ansel. A little different issue, maximum effort capital loan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Joining me at the witness table is the person you all know, Superintendent of Schools at Foley, Fred Nolan. I'd move 1083 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, very briefly, I will admire the problem a little and ask Superintendent Nolan to describe for you the fix or the solution in House File 1083. About a month ago, I found out that one of the promises I made to Chair Greiling was a promise that I wasn't going to be able to fulfill, and that promise was I wasn't going to ask the committee and the session to do anything other than global approaches affecting all of our school districts equally. A very novel approach, probably very naive as well. And so I apologize because I'm here today or tonight with a bill that affects 21 districts. These 21 school districts have loans for primarily building construction. These loans are called maximum effort capital loans. And without these loans by the state of Minnesota, these property poor districts, primarily in rural communities, would not have been able to upgrade their facilities, their school buildings. They're property poor and they're mostly rural. When I found out later that not only were they poor districts to begin with, but that because of these loans, they are among the state's highest school property taxpayers in terms of their residents, then that tweaked my interest, and that's why House File 1083 is here. And I'd ask Superintendent of Schools Nolan to explain how we propose to solve the issue.
Mr. Nolan, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, and thank you for spending time this evening. In the state tournament analogy that the chairman started with, in the tournament blizzard of paper you have on your table, find the PowerPoint that looks like this. And while you're doing that, I want to thank staffers Tim Strom and Steve Hines, our staffers for the two committees from House Research, for working together over the last couple of years, helping to educate our 21 capital loan school districts who have 30 or 50-year loans with the state of Minnesota, and you are our banker. And because of the way the property taxes have been changing, that loan acts like an adjustable rate mortgage, not a fixed mortgage for our taxpayers. And so what we propose is replacing ANTC, which is the basis of all equalization for debt service, with something called the Debt Service Net Tax Capacity, the DSNTC, say that quickly, for 21 maximum per capital school loans. And I'd like to say why it's important and how much this would cost and how it will affect the districts. Limited market value is a statewide policy that will be in place through PAY 2009, affecting school districts through 2011. It also includes some statutory permanent reductions such as green acres, so it will extend beyond that sunset. The maximum for capital loan districts must tax their taxpayers 28% of the value of ANTC. So anything that adjusts ANTC adjusts the repayment that we have to collect from our taxpayers annually on these 30 or 50-year loans. Currently, LMV artificially raises ANTC, distorts it, so some of our districts are paying, as Representative Anzell said, some of the highest tax rates in the state, 39%. 36%, 37% of their net tax capacity because their ANTC has been changed. How do you calculate ANTC? It's in a little box there. The sales ratio is created from the assessor's market value or limited market value, whichever is lower, divided by the sales price. The sales price is done over 21 months. Steve Hines could ably explain that to you. and then the sales ratio is divided into NTC to get to ANTC. On the backside, our proposal is very straightforward. It says, let's take the assessor's market value and divide it by the sales price. This would have two effects. One, it would remove the effective LMV from the sales ratio and return the sales ratio to its original purpose, adjusting for assessor errors, assessor practices across the state of Minnesota, and truly equalize the levies and equalization. It would also, for our 21 districts, lower our annual loan payment. And that's very blunt because we have among the highest tax rates. How does it work? And this is an example from Steve Hines, and I will try to explain it to you down here below. Let's assume we all had a $100,000 home. And the assessor said, you know, that's worth $90,000. So he's within 90% of the sales price. That's where he should be. But because it has limited market value of $60,000, maybe it's been in the family for 30 years, maybe it's Green Acres, one doesn't know, the current sales ratio for that would be 60%, $600 divided into 1,000 gives you 60%. So you take 28% of $1,000, you have a $280 tax bill because your ANTC became $1,000. Well, under our proposal, we would say that the net service, net tax capacity is 600 divided by 90%, or $667 net tax capacity under debt service. 28% of 667 is $187. It's a 31% rate. So you see the rate has changed. Now you may think, well, this is a pretty extreme example. Foley's current sales ratio is 0.66. Our sales ratio under these new conditions would go to 0.82. A $125,000 homeowner would see a savings of $42. And the really neat thing for these two committees, the savings to the taxpayers is nearly three times as large as the cost to the state. Because what we're talking about is what is the annual repayment on these loans, not the aid that goes out to the districts under the equalization aid. There would be an increase in aid. We estimate to be less than $900,000. It's probably going to be less than that. We haven't seen a fiscal note. In part, it's going to be less because all equalization is going down, as you've heard so ably tonight, and the issues it's causing for other districts. I would also suggest you may want to consider looking at this debt service equalization net tax capacity for all debt service. It has some interesting effects on other districts that have low sales ratios, that have regular debt and not maximum per capita loans. But the 21 districts, such as Foley, we have a 30 or 50-year loan with you. You are our banker. Please pay attention to how that rate is affecting us because it's like the relationship you have with a banker over your loan rate if you have a mortgage like this.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Nolan or Representative Garoppolo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. More of a, I guess it's a like a question for the analyst if there's a tax advisor here. When I thought LMV was rolling off relatively soon or was going away.
Yeah. Representative Garoppolo, it's still 2 years. It's phasing out. Okay. It's got 2 years left. I believe it's 2 years. Is there? There's Mr. Hines.
Ah, yes.
Would Mr. Hines, if you want to tell us what's happening, the limited market value, and I see Representative Paymar's out of the room right now.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Steve Hines from House Research. Two more years. Limited market value does run for two more years through pay 09, and then pay 010 is the first year it's off for regular levies. The sales the ANTC calculation really comes in like a year late for schools, so it would really be one extra year it affects school levy aid calculations. It's worth mentioning, reiterating what Mr. Foley, Mr. Nolan, excuse me, stated that it's also Green Acres is as much an issue here as LMV.
Okay. So thank you, Mr. Hines.
So, Mr.
Representative Garoppolo.
You know, I'm going to hold my other question. That's all right. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Any other questions? Anyone from the audience at this time that would care to testify for or against House File 1083? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Nolan. Representative Ann Zelk, the chair will lay over House File 1083.
Thank you, Mr.
At this time, I am going to call down. Now we're dealing with some bills that have a combination of levies, and I'm going to call down Representative Dietrich, Representative Abler, Representative Hillstrom, Representative Hortman, and Representative Brown. Representative Brown. Oh, there you are. We're not looking for you to discuss local government aid portion of your bill, only the levy portion. So what we will do is hear from all of the authors, and then if there's testimony. So Representative Dietrich, if you would go through both of your bills at this time, and do we hear a motion to move House File 466, 467, 1868, 680, 927, and 1518 for possible conclusion?
I so move.
Representative Heidgerken was the first one in there, and we're going to have all those here on for possible inclusion. So Representative Dietrich.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A House File 467 provides property tax relief by increasing and indexing the equalization of debt service, equalization revenue, health and safety, deferred maintenance, and operating capital levies payable to 2008 and beyond. I am going to leave my description of the bill up to the testifiers. Would you like me to move both the bills?
If you could just speak to both of them, and then when the testifiers come, I'll come back then in order of the
authors. Okay, and then here. House File 466 provides property tax relief by increasing and indexing the equalization of the equity transition and referendum equalization levies for payable 2008 and beyond. And then...
Representative Dietrich, you are also presenting Representative Hortman's bill on 927?
Yes. House File 927 provides property tax relief. This bill raises the equalization factors for the transition, equity, and referendum levy programs from $476,000 to
$750,000. So that one, Representative Dietrich, just deals with, referendum, transition, equity.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Abler here? There he is. Representative Abler, would you care to speak to House File 1868?
I would, Mr. Chair, and this has been a long day, and we're going to be longer than you probably, the way we're going on the Health Committee. You spent a good deal of time talking about this equalization and debt and the referendum debt service issue, but I wanted to... and I'm sure that you don't need to be schooled on the merits and the value of that, but I want to let the committee understand what happens if something isn't done to allow districts to pass their levies. And it's a joint meeting, and a lot of people aren't here, but there's a real challenge. It seems like we've evolved into a system where part of the school funding is going to be on the levy. We tried to fix that a few years ago, and it didn't really hold up as well as we liked, and was it a good idea or not. Nonetheless, here we are with what's left, and you have a mixed system. And districts like Anoka, for instance, are very dependent upon passing their levy. In fact, if their levy doesn't pass this next fall, we're going to be lacking $25 million, which we're the largest district, so that's probably the same as $1 million to some other district, but it's really a lot of money for us. It's close to 10% of the budget, I think, that we're facing. But there's been work all along trying to make it easier to pay for these levies. But the prospect of a district like ours having that kind of a whack just to renew the existing money is frightening to me. And that was so it takes some real money to put into one of these kind of bills to make that easier to do. But I think that as you attempt to soften the blow on some of the property tax impacts, the people are suffering. A lot of that comes from these kinds of levies that are the equalization has kind of worn off. And I'm sure you've talked about the effect of inflation on the equalization, so I won't need to repeat that to you. I know that Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, that one of your caucus themes, two of them were education and property tax. And these two topics dovetail right into this very point. You were not here for my opening first sentence, so, Madam Chair, but and maybe the people aren't really that excited to have levies, but they exist. And our system, if you took them all away, the system would collapse. And Anoka District, for instance, is amongst, it's very well run. It's got 3% admin and 75% in the classroom, so the governor must like us, you know. Got that little postcard thing going for us. But they did it on their own without a postcard, so without the requirement, I want to point out, too. And Anoka gets less money, a little less than half, it's below the state average, below the metro average. And if a district like Anoka is going to suffer at risk if they can't pass their levy, the whole other system is going to have other troubles as well. And some of the rural districts, as they struggle with their debt service challenges and other referendums they can't pass, to me make this kind of a key issue. And that's why I bothered to put a bill in that combined them both, trying to serve all the state. And so I urge you, as you consider what you're going to put into your bills and where you're going to put the limited dollars you do have available for tax relief and education funding, to focus on this. I do want to encourage the committee and both the chairs that one of the benefits of a local levy that does have value is at a time when the state monies are somewhat limited, making it easy to pass a local levy is a way to leverage the money maybe two to one or even better depending upon the area. And the monies that now go on the local sources to pay for the levies that are paid, if they were supplanted, we couldn't afford to pay all that. And so as we try to find a way to properly fund our schools, at least as a transitional state, the levies do provide a vehicle for that purpose, even though you may not be that excited about them. Yeah. And at least they are locally approved, so people got to vote for them. What Anoka has suffered, as many districts have suffered, is that the equalization that made so much sense 10 years ago now is just a good start. And we used to be more than 2-for-1. I think you paid 40 cents and got a dollar. I think that's what it used to be. And now it's like you pay, 60 cents or 70 cents and get a dollar. So it's a tiny piece. So I'm telling you this now ahead of time, and so you're aware of it. And so as the decisions come down, they'll be made in the next few weeks, I think some of the placeholder decisions we'll be making, to please consider this part. Because the effects of what would happen to a district like Anoka should its levy not pass this coming fall would hit it would be planned for in the next cycle, and it would hit I think summer of 08, is that right? Mm-hmm. Which might be a bad time for a lot of cuts to notice up, just a thought. Anyway, so with that, I'm trying to be cheerful and optimistic, but we are frankly nervous about it with all the different challenges that go with education. So I appreciate the time and I appreciate your attention. So thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Abler. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did not bring any testifiers today, so what I say, then I'm all done. House File 680 is the omnibus of levy bills. This is taking, it would cost $240 million if we did this bill. And it simplifies the school levy calculations by using the same equalizing factors for all the equalized school levies and setting them to 150% of the statewide average tax base per pupil. I became very interested in school levies when I represent the Brooklyn Center School District, and many of you know that we have gone out, I believe, for 4 levies in the last year and a half and failed them all. Our school district is in statutory operating debt, and the city of Brooklyn Center is number one in property taxes in the state. And so we need desperate help, and this is one way that I thought we should be talking about. So, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, when you get your targets, I hope that you'll take a look at the impact of these levies on our school districts and do what you can to help us.
Thank you very much, Representative Hillstrom. Thank you. Representative Brown, 15, 18, and you have an amendment to offer.
I do. I move the amendment, please, to get it in the shape that I'd like. The amendment actually, what it does is...
Representative Brown moves H-1518A1 amendment. Okay, Representative Brown.
And if you've all got that, what that amendment does is it just inserts the percentages that were left blank in the original draft. It gets it into the shape that I'd like.
So you're adding the percentages to all the equalization factors? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, please.
Okay. Any discussion on this to get it into the form and shape the author would like? If not, I'm going to call for a vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Brown, to your bill.
I'll speak to my bill, and I do have a testifier to answer questions and get into more detail if we need to. But House File 1518 is designed to provide property tax relief through restoration of LGA, school property tax, levy equalization, and county aid. And my purpose tonight is just to speak to the school property tax levy equalization portion. And that's in the first five sections. And in that portion of the bill, what is going to happen is that it's going to offer $175 million in property tax levy equalization. And it's broken down into three portions. $75 million goes to operating capital levy, and in the simplest terms, that's books. Let's see, $88 million will go toward the referendum levy, which is the voter-approved levies, $16 million in debt service levy, which translates into buildings, and I say all this stuff to keep reminding me. And then there are changes from the fixed equalization level into a percentage of statewide tax capacity to ensure permanent property tax relief, and that is it in a brief summary.
Okay. At this time, we're going to take testimony, then members if they have questions. So at this time, Representative Dietrich, if you would call down any testifiers you have.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. I would like to call on Joel Sutter of Ehlers and Associates. He has been working with the Minnesota School Board Association in developing these two bills, House File 666 and 466 and 467. And they put a lot of work into these two bills and trying to get them to work together and become a little more simplified and make some sense. So I will defer to him.
Okay, Mr. Sutter, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to applaud all of you on your patience and spending the time tonight to listen to a subject that I'm sure you realize by now is vitally important to our school children and school districts in the state, but also rather dry. So I'll try to keep my remarks short, and I'll speak first to House File 466, which is the bill that would reduce property taxes by increasing equalization aid for referendum levies.
And, sir, would you please state your name for the record here?
Okay, yes, I'm sorry. I thought I did, but maybe I skipped over that.
I think I did. I don't know if you did.
Joel Sutter, I'm a financial advisor with Ehlers and Associates, and we work with school districts all around the state in on their bond issues, operating referendums, and projects of that nature. I apologize.
Thank you.
You've heard lots of bills tonight on these subjects, and it's an extremely important subject, as I said. There's been a lot of charts and graphs that have been handed out on debt service levies in particular. This yellow handout that we have is just some real simple information on referendum levies. The same problem that is occurring with debt service equalization is actually happening with referendum equalization. It's maybe not quite as severe yet, but it's getting there. And figure one on the second page of that handout shows the equalizing factor, that straight line across the top at $476,000. And the dotted line is the state average referendum market value per pupil unit. And you can see in the first year of referendum equalization in 1997, the state average was way, way below the equalizing factor. It's now crept up to where it's almost at the equalizing factor. And the result of that is shown on the next page, where the percentage of referendum revenue that's paid by state aid statewide has declined from 35% throughout most of the late 1990s down to 16% now. That problem is just going to continue getting worse if you don't do something about this. The bill would remedy this problem by setting the equalizing factor for the first tier of referendum revenue at 125% of the state average referendum market value per pupil unit, and the equalizing factor for the second tier at 75% of the state average. You might ask why 125% or why 100% or 150% or 120%. There's no science to this. There's no exactly right number. When we went through the analysis, we realized that in the early years of debt service equalization, the equalizing factor was about 125% of the state average ANTC per pupil unit. So we applied that same concept to both of these bills. The beauty of that is that if you're in a district which has the state average value per pupil unit and the equalizing factor is 125%, you're going to get a little bit of state aid. If you're a state average district, you're going to get a little bit of state aid, maybe 20% of the referendum, for example, would come as state aid. If you're way below that, you're going to get more state aid. If you're more than 125% above the state average, you're not going to get any state aid. So there is some methodology to it. Most districts would get a little bit of help with this. It still is not going to pay for the majority of the costs of referendum equalization. This bill would also adjust the equalizing factors for the transition levy and the equity levy. These are two smaller school district levies, which are also spread on referendum market value and also equalized at the same level. It would make their equalizing factors the same as the equalizing factor for the first tier of referendum. I believe the numbers that Mr. Strom put together showed that the cost of this would be about $52.5 million for the operating referendum equalization and about another $13 million for the other two levies.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Representative Dietrich, any other testifiers?
Joel is going to talk about the other bill also.
Got you. All right. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on House File 467, it's a similar concept, but with debt service equalization. We do have another handout. I think I will have the pages hand this out, but you've seen most of these charts and graphs already because they've been used by some of the other testifiers. Basic problem with debt service equalization aid is that for the first 4 years of the program, the state totals of in the mid-1990s, the state totals of ANTC increased gradually, and the equalizing factor was actually increased each year. And as a result, it remained at about 125% of the state average. Since 2003, tax capacities around the state, meaning property values, have increased dramatically, while the first-tier equalizing factor has remained the same. And we're at the point now where instead of 125% of the state average, it's at about 50% of the state average. As a result, the percentage of debt service revenue paid by the state has plummeted from about 11% of total debt service costs in the mid-1990s to under 2% currently. So the program just is not working as it's currently configured. And I think you've heard tonight that there, I think, are two groups of students and school districts that have been particularly hurt by this. First of all, there are taxpayers in districts which have passed bond issues, initially received substantial aid, but now receive much less or nothing. And in those districts, taxpayers are paying more and more each year, and I think Mr. Peterson from Uppsala made that very clear in his testimony. The other group, and you've heard from some of these districts tonight too, are the districts which can't provide adequate facilities because the tax impact for their bond issues would be great. Facilities because the tax impact for their bond issues would be greater than the voters could support. This bill would fix the problem with debt equalization aid by doing three things. First of all, it would reduce the minimum threshold tax rate, the sort of minimum level of paying before the state steps in and makes any payments, from 15% of ANTC to 5% of ANTC. That means more districts would have a debt service levy that's high enough to qualify for aid. Second, it would combine the current two tiers of aid into one and increase the equalizing factor back to where it was in the beginning, at 125% of the state average. And third, it would cause that equalizing factor to automatically adjust each year. And that's critically important. If you do nothing else this year, even if you don't have any money to devote to this, you can index the equalizing factor to the state average value per pupil unit. That would at least plug the hole that's allowing all the water to drain out of the barrel, so no more water would drain out of it, and it wouldn't it'd be very low cost. So that's what it would do with debt service equalization aid. It also would substantially decrease operating capital levies, similar to the proposal in the governor's budget. And it also would change the equalizing factors for two smaller capital-related levies, the health and safety levy and the new deferred maintenance levy, and would make them the same as the debt service equalizing factor. And the reason for that is that districts have options for how they can finance capital projects, and we don't believe it makes a lot of sense that the percentage of state aid that they receive is going to vary greatly depending on which option they choose. So it would index all of those levies to that same equalizing factor.
Mr. Sutter, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sutter. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I would call on a testifier for Representative Portman for her bill.
Yep.
Is that fine?
Fine.
Okay, I would call on Roger Johnson, an Anoka-Hennepin resident and taxpayer.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee, and if you would please state your name for the...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roger Johnson. I'm a member of the parent legislative team of the North Kennepin School District. And after listening to 2.5 hours of this testimony, my mind is going around like a pea in a whistle. I don't know what your mind is doing, but all those charts and graphs and everything, you can take those home. I'm not going to give you any of those. I can just tell you that our parent legislative team is about 12 years old. And I think parents have been drawn to it in our district because of cuts that were made early on, starting in 1988. We began to make cuts in the North Kennepin district. Now, we're the biggest school district in the state, over 40,000 students. And when programs get cut out of elementary schools and secondary schools, parents begin to wonder what's happening, particularly when they look at districts that are neighboring districts nearby and realize those districts, if they lived in those districts, their children would have advantages that our children don't have. So I'm not going to go into the details of all those cuts, but I want to point out just one interesting thing, and that is that the cuts are accelerating. You've heard a lot of grim news here, but it's really getting grimmer. In the first 12 years that we made cuts, we cut $19 million out of this district. That's from 1988 to the year 2000. In the first two fiscal years in this century, we cut $16 million. So the problem is getting worse in terms of cuts because of lack of funding, not better. The second thing I want to point out is something a little different than you already know. You know that there's different, because you haven't got indexed equalization factors that are increased and so on. You've got some districts that for a particular dollar per pupil unit levy referendum, some districts can raise more money than others. You already know that issue. But when we look back as parents 10 years ago, in 1997, and we compare, say, a $200,000 house, my house, let's say, in the North Kennepin School District, with your house, the same value, in a wealthier district, next door to us, for a $200 per pupil unit levy, if it passes, I would pay $206 and you'd pay $90. It's a factor of 2.3. I'm going to pay 2.3 times as much of an increase in my taxes as you would pay for the same house in neighboring districts. We now look 10 years later in 2007 at the same districts, the same house, the same $200 per pupil unit, and we pay less money overall in taxes. That's probably the good news. A $200,000 house, I'd pay, say, $208. You would pay, in the wealthy district, $43. So we brought down the amount of increase in the property taxes, but the factor difference is 2.5. I paid 2.5 times as much interest as you. So the factor went from 2.3 to 2.5 in 10 years. The problem is getting worse in terms of disparity between wealthy districts and poorer districts. So I think that this testimony you're hearing tonight is really compelling in terms of you working together to jointly solve this problem in 2007. Why go any farther? Why let the problem go any farther? We don't have a uniform system of public schools. What we're concerned as parents in this largest district in the state, and Representative Abler referred to this, that we have on November 6th, we'll have a levy coming up. If we don't pass that levy in fiscal 08, we're going to cut $31 million out of our budget. Plus, if the legislature doesn't provide any more money that's in the governor's budget, and we have to cut an additional $6.2 million. So in 1 year, we're going to cut the same amount of money, about $37 million, that we cut over a 17-year period out of the district, all in 1 year. That will be devastating to our districts. I'll bet you represent districts that are in equal straits. The money amounts may be different, but what's happening, the trend is the same, and now is the time to make a difference.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Need further testimony?
No,
Representative Abler, do you have a testifier?
Well, I don't know if you want to hear any more details about what might happen. I think it's been clearly enough for tonight, and it's been a long day. I tried to present a theme that this is something that, I don't know how you get out of it, but I thank you for your attention to it.
Thank you very much. Representative Brown, do you have someone that would care to testify? Mr. Peterson, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman, members. My name is Steve Peterson. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I will be very brief because we've been here a while. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities put together a package this year that Representative Brown is carrying for us, and we're grateful for that, that looked at the whole package. It looked at school funding, or school equalization levies to reduce school property taxes, LGA and county aid. And today you heard and saw the runs that deal with the school levy reductions. And just to point out that the reason that our mayors got behind this idea is they understand that they want to go at the property tax increases kind of to the areas of where they were driven from. In greater Minnesota communities and inner cities, that does mean local government aid, in also county aid. And also for many communities, whether they be small or large, debt service, operating capital, or referendum levy equalizations have been a major driving force of property taxes. And that is why we put together a package that contained all of that and tried to make it as balanced as we could in hopes that we could see a similar thing come out in the end. Just so everyone knows, our bill is a bill that is split 51% to the greater Minnesota and 49% to the metro area. It was 50-50 when I drafted it, but then we had some new LGA numbers and they kind of shifted a little. So with that, I would just like to thank the committee for their time and any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. At this time, from members here, are there any questions for any of the authors of these bills? If not, is there anyone from the audience that would care to testify for or against House Files 466, 467, 1868, 680, 927, and 1518? If not, thank you so much to the authors of these bills and the testifiers, and the chair will lay over for House File 466, 467, 1868, 680, 927, and 1518. That brings us to House File 800, Representative Demmer.
Hello.
Oh.
And I see a list of 8 testifiers on this bill. Can we possibly... No, I'm just joking. Representative Demmer, I didn't want to set you up like this.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. This should be the favorite bill of the night, the last one.
Okay. Would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 800 for possible and maybe probable inclusion in the property tax division report.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Demmer. And we have an amendment.
Yes, we do.
And members are receiving this amendment. And it is listed here as the Demmer 1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment and then tell us what you're trying to accomplish here?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could get a copy of the amendment from one of the pages, it'd be great. I'll tell you what we're trying to accomplish here is we needed to make a change in Section 3 to make sure we didn't have an unintended consequence to the counties of to taxing the counties when there's more than one county with a school district.
Got you. So would you like to move that Demmer 1 amendment?
I'd like to move the Demmer 1 amendment.
Okay. We have an amendment, the Demmer 1 amendment. Any comments on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the Demmer 1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think it was last year or the year before we passed the bill specific for the Rochester School District in Olmsted County to allow, upon mutual agreement, for the school district to certify to the county their levy on October 7th rather than September 30th. Mr. Chair and members, that doesn't sound like a large deal, but what it allowed the Rochester School District to do is to have one more school board meeting before they certified, and rather than just certifying the max, they were able to actually look at their levy because of the time frame, a little extra time, and not just certify the maximum without looking at it, but actually look at it and certify something other than that. So, and that was a one-year deal, and I believe it's Representative Norton has the same bill to do that again for Rochester and Olmsted County. And, Mr. Chair and members, what I thought is that rather than do it specific for that one county, we would allow any school district and county that mutually agreed to do the same thing. And it has to be a mutual agreement. The school district and the county have to agree that this is something that they can both work with, and if they agree to do that, then basically what we do is we allow the school district to certify to the county by October 7th rather than September 30th, and then we also allow the counties then to, I'm sorry, the school district to also certify to the commissioner by October 10th instead of October 7th.
Okay. And Representative Demmer, the county has to agree to this. They're not forced to do this.
That's correct. There is nothing in here that says anybody has to do anything. It's all permissive. And I believe there are probably some counties where they might not want to do that, and then it would be a no-go. And if they agreed that it was okay, then they would do that. And I do have a couple of testifiers, Mr. Chair. I believe if they're still here.
What is the purpose?
Representative Earhart, you have a question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, what is the purpose of this? What is the effect of it? What does it do?
Representative Demmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, what it does is it gives a school district just about seven more days within which to look at their certified levy and see if they want to and to look at their levy and see if they want to certify a different number than the maximum.
Do you have a testifier?
Well, Mr. Paul, I believe, is going to. Oh, you know what? He's at a different committee meeting. Mr. Chair, you know what? I don't need the testifiers if they're not here. This is pretty straightforward. Yeah. It's very permissive. I've got a letter from Olmsted County that indicates that they do indeed think this is just fine as long as they go along with it. The Association of Counties was concerned. That's what the amendment did because basically without the amendment, it just says that if they do the agreement, then the dates change. But everybody thinks it's just fine because it's permissive, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Demmer. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer, I'm glad that you had this generic bill because, as you know, and a lot of members in this room might not know, we had one bill just for the Rochester Public Schools that did this. Last year it might have been your bill, and now it's up for renewal again this year. And everybody wondered why only Rochester, and nobody knew if anybody else wanted it or not. And so all of us on the K-12 Education Finance Committee were looking forward to this bill to find out what the big deal was, you know. And so I hope there's somebody here that could help us to know why is it that, some pluses and minuses with this bill.
Is there anyone in the audience, first of all, that would care to testify for or against this House File 800? We do. Mr. Nolan.
Fred Nolan, Superintendent Foley. And I can tell you that you have very, very little time to examine the preliminary levy before you certify it. It is just an unbelievable rush. And the board only has one night to look at it. You get it in mid-September. It has to be done by September 30th. Our rule of thumb and Foley is we discuss something in one board meeting and take action the next, just like you're doing tonight. You can't do that with your levy, and it's extremely important. I was there when Superintendent Jerry Williams was testifying in the Senate, and it made perfect sense to me because in an electronic age, it doesn't take that long, I don't believe, for the counties to process that work. But it would certainly help the districts because we levy the max because you cannot increase your levy in December. You can always decrease it. But what goes out on your truth and taxation statement is what you agreed to in September. So a year ago in Foley, we very carefully under-levied by about what we thought was going to be about $100,000 because we were going out to our taxpayers and we wanted to say, if you didn't vote for this increase, there would be no increase in your taxes. We want to be very clear about that. And that's the year that certain taxes were shifted in capital and other things. You've discussed this many times down here. So we underlevied. The problem was we overestimated. And we underlevied by about $200,000 and we were short in our books. I think if we'd had the extra 2 weeks, we could have done the math a little bit better, because we were working with the department. People from Tom Melcher's department were helping us on that. It does make a difference.
Thank you very much. Anyone else from the audience, first of all? Or do you have a question, representative, for the testifier? Representative Ansel?
Mr. Chair, not necessarily for the testifier or the author, but I'd be interested to know if the Association of Minnesota Counties has a position, and what county auditors who have to certify at their end for truth and taxation purposes and that whole chain reaction process that has to take place.
And we do have a representative. Mr. Matthews, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Association of Minnesota
Counties...
Would you
please state your name?
Oh, sorry. Joe Matthews, Association of Minnesota Counties. We haven't taken a position on this bill specifically. One of our affiliates is the Minnesota Association of County Officers, which is the auditors who certify these. It's my understanding, Becca Price, who represents them, I spoke with her today, and they're on board with the language as amended by Representative Demmer. It's our... I guess our prerogative, although it's not an official position from the counties, that if the county auditors are saying they'll have enough time to certify these levy amounts and they can agree mutually with the schools to give them that time, I mean, that's, I guess, their decision. Obviously, the state law and the truth in taxation law sets the timelines. And so if those are really short, that might be something that warrants revisiting in another committee. But for the county's perspective, if the auditors are going to be okay with it, then... you know, we're not gonna really take a position in opposition to that. So I hope that clarifies. I'm sorry, I don't represent Mako, so I can't speak for them, but that's the conversation that was had.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matthews, for that. Anyone else from the audience for or against? Are you, I think.
Sure. Mr. Call made it from his other committee meeting.
I guess there are eight testifiers.
Sorry. Just trying to do good work there.
I understand that.
If I could, I did contact Superintendent Williams, and Mr. Call is here on his behalf to talk about the bill. He was up here for other things and just didn't want to make another trip.
That sounds good. Please state your name.
John Call. I represent...
Thank you.
John Call. I represent actually two players in this. I represent Rochester Public Schools, and I represent Washington County. And the beauty of Representative Demmer's bill and the language is that it works for both of my clients, because it allows Rochester to have some time in this case, and it allows counties to either go along with it if they can or not, and not all counties will be able to do that. And so it's a situation that gets people together around the table to see if something can be worked out, and if it doesn't work out, so it's a good bill.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? You bet.
Mr. Chair, they're coming out of the woodwork. This is great.
I think, Representative Demmer, I think we're gaining steam as the night goes on.
Picking up second wind.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Committee, I just want to down here and support Representative Demmer's bill. We've had requests from multiple school districts to have this opportunity, and Rochester really letting them sort of do the demo for the state that good things can come, and it's an opportunity for local governments working together. It's something we're sponsoring at our day at the Capitol this year with cities, counties, and school districts coming together talking about local issues. This would be a nice tool to have. Thank you.
Would you state your name, please?
Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Anyone else from the audience care to speak for or against? No one. Very good. Representative Demmer, any closing comments?
The other thing I would say is I believe last year Rochester, Mr. Chair, did not certify the maximum, and I think Superintendent Williams told me that the reason they didn't is because they did fit one more school board meeting in where they could talk about this. So, you know, quite frankly, when I was brought this idea, I said, 1 week, is that a big thing? Well, it's one more meeting. And so for them it was important, and as long as it's permissive and they have to agree, I agreed to do this. So with that, I renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, and the Chair will lay over House File 800. And I would like to, again, thank everyone for this excellent discussion on what is a very important issue and one that's probably needed to be addressed before, but we're really seeing the impact of that. And I also want to thank Representative Dietrich and Representative Brown for the presentation and your leadership on these issues, and everyone who brought bills forth before the committee. And Representative Earhart, and then I'm going to turn it over to Representative Greiling for the last word tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Greiling, you know I've never been on the K-12 committee, but as I sat here listening to these bills and then I looked carefully around the room, I have a simple solution for all of these problems. Raise the income tax.
And we're going to give Chair Greiling the last word tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, for that segue. And I definitely hope that since we have some members of the Tax Committee here who are not on education finance, I hope that we're not just going to be discussing property taxes, but we will be discussing the progressive income tax. You know, the property taxes are the tax by default, and I think of last resort, for schools. Representative Abler said, well, we're always going to have them, so we have to equalize them. Unfortunately, if we're always going to have them, we have to equalize them, and we spend a lot of money there. But I go back to my opening statement, it is not money for the classrooms. And so if we would raise the income tax, and if Representative Earhart can do it, Representative Edina, well, the rest of us certainly can do it. And that would be a much fairer way to do our constitutional responsibility. We started out, Representative Brown talked about, or Representative Dietrich on their PowerPoint, you know, what is our responsibility? It's a state responsibility. It is not a local responsibility to be having all these property taxes that fall upon the senior citizens and the first-time home buyers and all the foreclosures, the heaviest. And the more we go down in life, Representative Earhart, even those of us who have property wealth in our districts can't use it anymore, anywhere near the degree that we could before either, to the point where my district just barely can pass levy referendums, and our CI for the levy referendum only counts as a one. And so I think we really have to look at the income tax much more than the property tax. And I hope people will join those of us who are interested in that if we really, really care about schools and not rely so much on these property taxes, because we don't seem to care to fund them equitably either. So why not go straight to the source of real money, dollar for dollar, for the classroom, and that's the best property tax relief of all. Thank you.
And thank you. Until the next episode, we are adjourned.